Actually, episode 45 for the 1st of August 2009, and it's our birthday this week, guys! We were going to do the show in party hats, but Josh and I forgot to go out and buy the party hats. Anyway, I am joined in studio here today by the lovely Katrina. How are you, Katrina?
I'm good. Hello, everybody, and congratulations on 1 year.
Woohoo! Oh, by the way, Katrina, you're now on camera.
I know.
Isn't it scary?
I know, but now all my facials and any coiffuring will all be tax deductible.
I am also joined, as usual, by the venerable Mr. Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
As always, fantastic.
That's excellent.
And what little tired. Little tired.
Well, yeah, me too, but we will explain why. Okay, no, actually,
I'm going
to throw this
emotional
to you, Josh. Why are we tired?
We're tired because after watching an incredibly interesting movie, we decided to stay up late trying to install things and having conversations about Microsoft installs and porn.
Yeah, it's good. It was good. It was a good effort, I thought.
It was an interesting.
It is actually amazing where your mind goes to at 2 o'clock in the morning. What you start thinking about and what you start talking about. It's one of those crazy, wild things. You know, You're sitting there kicking and screaming because your netbook won't install Microsoft Live. Was it 500 meg download? Seemingly,
yeah.
For an install of MSN Messenger.
Well, we have no idea how big it was because it got to 80 and it was still going. And yeah.
So that means it's like the TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Oh, my camera seems to have frozen up. I'm going to throw it over to Katrina's camera. No, Katrina's camera and say, Katrina, what have you been up to this week?
Well, first off, I'm going to sing happy birthday in Arabic to the show. Sandakhelua yagami, sandakhelua yagami, sandakhelua ya habibi, sandakhelua yagami.
And why are we?
Just because I can.
Oh, fair enough.
It's very Obama, isn't it? Just because I can. What have I been up to? I've moved house, and so I'm now in a sea of boxes. Any of you that have been to Canada and seen the hoodoos, that's I'm just moving through little corridors of boxes, rat-like in my own maze. But I'm very happy to be here today.
We're glad to have you back. I know we've actually mentioned on the show that you have been moving house, which is one of the reasons why you haven't been on the show for the last few weeks.
And I haven't been able to connect my Skype, and it's all a bit technologically difficult. But thank God I'm on Geek, actually.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Skype, because that is actually one of the stories for this week. So first of all, let me just say that today's show is kind of interesting, because it's kind of a little bit tech-heavy compared to our film news. But some of these tech stories will actually roll on, because Josh and I are going to continue our live coverage of the great internet war of 2009, as it was we started it last week when we were looking at for Katrina's edification, we started looking at the whole thing between Google and Microsoft.
Oh yeah,
and this war that seems to be going on between these two companies. I'm sitting here looking at it going, you know, I'm sure I've hit the vision switch to change cameras. Oh, there it is. Okay. Little bit of a delay on that switch over. Anyway, it just occurred to us that we seem to be seeing a real full-on war brew. But we've got some little bit more news on
casualties?
I think there will be casualties. We haven't had any yet. But I think there's going to be some pretty major casualties as this goes on. Anyway, so we're gonna continue our coverage on that. We also have a story about Skype. Now, so as I say, it's interesting you brought up Skype, because eBay might be having a bit of issues with that. We've got a little bit of game news. It's not really staggering game news, but a little bit of game news. We have Google and continuing the war of the internet of 2009. We have side players in this, and that, of course, is Google and Apple at this point. We also have some new biometric devices that are coming out, which are actually kind of cool. We saw this, yeah, and we thought this is actually kind of interesting. Moving into film news, we got a couple of new trailers that have surfaced over the last week. We'll come back to those. Alien, the classic science fiction film, 1979, that spawned four sequels and now Aliens versus Predators and all. It's got a prequel coming out, and the prequel has actually now finally got a director. It actually thought it had a director a couple of weeks ago. That person is now out because Fox decided they wanted a different director, and they got their wish, and that director has signed. More on that later.
I'll be opinionated about that then later.
I actually think you'll probably be quite surprised, and you'll probably go, you know what? We might actually have a winner on this because I think we've found the consensus.
Well, look,
might
anyway.
Actually, if you're going to do it, it might work. We also have the Pirate Bay back in the news, and this was actually kind of funny. And we're going to end this up with a full review of Michael Mann's new gangster film, Public Enemies, which will have a full spoiler zone at the end. And let me tell you, that ought to be quite amusing because I think we have some very
interesting,
passionate,
passionate opinions.
The word passionate is just used to death. People are passionate about getting a life of
Oh, you just wait till we get to this review. But more on that later. First of all, we're going to head our way straight into the fact that this week we had some kind of exciting news. We keep telling you to put reviews and everything up onto iTunes to move us up the ranks. We did manage to get onto page 5 of the featured film and TV podcast, which I was very excited about. Woo-hoo. Then, in the middle of the week, we dropped off.
Oh.
And now today we're back on page 5 again. So we must be literally sitting right on the border.
And that'll give you a nasty paper cut.
Of being on this featured page. So guys, get in there, put your reviews up, download the show. Even if you watch the live show, please still go ahead and download the audio podcast because that's really what this is all about. And if you download it, even if you don't have to listen to it again because you've already watched it live, at least you've downloaded it and you've been a number for us.
Help us claw our way to page 1.
That's right. The live show does not actually help our numbers in any way. We do this just because we like doing it live.
That's right.
And it's kind of fun, and we can get the feedback from the room. So how is everybody in the room today? Now, for those who are just listening to the audio podcast, we go out live every Saturday morning, roughly 11 o'clock. Today was quarter past 11, but roughly 11 o'clock Australian Eastern Standard Time, which is UTC plus 10. And you can join us at geekactually.com live, and we have a chat room, and you can actually see what's going on. And we are looking on here. I can see that Little Geek is saying that the Internet War is going to be World War III. Very possibly.
I think it's
going to be the equivalent.
The question is going to be who takes what side.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting because I've just got this envisioning of us standing on opposite ends of a battlefield. You on Apple, me on Microsoft.
But I've said before, I don't think this war is Apple anymore. I think this war is definitely coming down to Google, Microsoft. This is the
those would be the big players.
These are the juggernauts. This is the, you know, if you're going to have your Axis and your allied forces, these are the two leaders.
Who are you saying plays Axis?
Microsoft. I think the general worldwide chat room is the worldwide consensus. We did this in the 2 shows ago when we said who do we think was going to come out smelling like roses in this war, and the resounding response was Google. Everybody wanted Google to be the winner of this. So
I refuse. I'll be taking the Axis.
Anyway, all right. So Josh, you're going to take us into a little bit of gaming news, I believe.
Yes, just a few quick things. I won't take very long. Number one is that we covered in the first show I was in, actually, the E3 wrap-up and the fact that Microsoft were working on Project Natal or Natal.
Or however it's pronounced.
Whatever it's pronounced.
Not Nutella.
It's definitely not that. And we were saying that the technology was interesting and what we had seen was very unique, and their ideas were very promising for what they have. But it was just a quick note to say that THQ has actually confirmed that they will be the actual project is coming out 2010. Am I right?
For the THQ is 2010, I believe.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it will be interesting. We finally have sort of an area where we'll actually be seeing some of the what we saw put into motion and maybe even released. So it's good to know that we at least have an area of time where they're actually planning to release this. And I say the sooner the better because the sooner they can get on with this project, the sooner we can sort of see when this motion system is going to kick in and whether or not it's going to be even slighted at all by, you know, sort of the Wii Motion Plus or
I think it's a step in the right direction that we're actually seeing a games company come behind it now. Up until now, it's just been Microsoft saying, look at this great technology we can do. Whereas now we actually have a games company saying, yeah, we can actually use.
Exactly. Yes. It's good to see that they actually have something sort of being planned for it, which means that the technology is now being given out to publishers, which is good because it means that we'll start to see projects actually coming out, because up until now it's really just been Microsoft waving it up and saying we have a few cool little toys. Actually seeing some work means that the project itself will also be seeing the light of day soon, which would be good.
True. Absolutely. That's all good. Now, speaking of the concept of motion and cameras and so forth with your computer games, you've got a second story, which was actually interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's almost like PS3, Sony has actually come to the table and said, we want to make sure that people realize that we still have this technology, because up until now, the iTour has just been a dead system. There's really been nothing used for it at all. And it's kind of interesting to think that they are now really trying to push that technology back into the market after such a lapse, really. Like, I mean, they had a few games when the console first came out, and then it just disappeared. Now we saw the first video of a... sort of almost pet-style game.
It was kind of Pokemon-ish.
Dog, monkey, cat-breeded thing on a table.
But it was really the video that
doing
we saw.
Well, this is the interesting thing, because the table was an empty table, but once they had put the table down, the animal would run all over the table. They could interact with it.
You can actually see a video of this working if you go to Gizmodo.com. I think it's where we found the article. Got a video of a demonstration. And it was really interesting because the technology was quite phenomenal, because he's interacting with this digital pet on the table, but the table's empty. So the pet is animated on the screen, and obviously they've mapped out the table somehow. I'm not sure how they've set it up.
So if he puts his hand in the area,
the thing jumps over his hand or interacts with his hand. You can pet it and stuff like that. But what was the most amazing part of it?
Yeah, I thought the interesting thing was the card, where they just had a piece of cardboard, but because it was registered as a particular shape, when he dragged it onto the screen, it became a like an X-ray, and he could actually look inside the pet check its health. And it's a bone structure and everything using this piece of cardboard, but the camera would represent it as something else on the screen, which I thought was amazing.
The other thing I thought was really, and the dynamics of it though, just on a technical point of view, were that when he when the animal is running around the table, it actually has a shadow which is being cast on the table and the whole bit. I mean, it's a really fascinating piece of technology, and I'm hoping that this is the shape of things to come. I don't think it's in itself.
It's effectively operating and following certain rules and parameters, as if it was like, you know, remember when the Lord of the Rings games came out, and they actually, what was so good about that initial technology was that it wasn't just like bundles of people moving in identical ways, that different things would actually respond. Is it the same sort of thing taken to the next level? Like, there's effectively rules and parameters. I mean, obviously, gravity is affecting the thing.
This is your turn.
Yeah, no. The actual engine itself is relatively simple. By what we can do with today's standards, if you pull out the camera aspects of it, it was a simple demonstration. The things that really sort of set it apart are, of course, A, the interaction, and the fact that the camera can represent items as different things on screen, but also the fact that it can map a surface area and let your, you know, thing loose on that. What I want to know is, if the table wasn't there, can it see the rest of your lounge room or whatever as its playroom, or is it
wondering that, whether or not, like, is there a setup process that has to happen? You know, like with the Wii, you have to put it down on a table to make sure you get stability and so forth, right? Is there a setup process where you actually have to map out?
Have to put a table down to play with this animal?
That's right.
Interesting point. Not sure. It's too early in the piece. I mean,
I think it's an interesting piece of demonstration.
I mean, this is coming back to Sony's original thing of their camera system anyway, where they were showing off the blue bolt system, the motion system that was sort of to fight natal. Which was the one-to-one camera system using sort of the motion capture technology with the blue balls that are similar to what you'd put on a costume when they're motion capturing people and being able to move that. So I think they're probably just trying to adapt the camera technique so they maybe don't even need that. because that would be interesting to see whether or not they could come up with something more accurate.
Yeah.
Then that, but we'll see again.
Well, once again, the time will tell on everything. But I think we're running rampant at the moment with technology. I've actually thrown these down on the running order here, but we don't necessarily have to do them in the exact order because I'd like to actually jump from that talking about rampant new technology to what's going on in it's Japan, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was Japan.
I think I might even have the. Did I print the article? I may not have printed the article on this one because it was only like a paragraph. Once again, on Gizmodo, you can go and find this article. Basically, they've come up with a new biometric system, which I thought was just really... At first, when I looked at it, I went, is this a non-story? What's the story? But then we started to look into it. We thought, this is actually quite interesting. The idea is you pre-register in advance with your credit card and everything else, and you get scanned. And what they do is they actually fire light through your hand, and it actually records the structure of your veins. So like when you put a torch through your hand. So basically you've got this absolutely unique pattern of your vein structure. Sorry?
Veins move.
Well, I don't know how they're doing this then, because what you do then is when you walk up to your vending machine, you just put your hand in and it literally scans, fires a light through your hand and scans everything that's inside your hand. And it seems to be working for them.
So if you're not the right hand, it just what? Tears it
just,
off.
Oh yeah, the blade comes down and just takes off the wrist.
Like Roman Holiday with, what's his name, Gregory Peck. And yeah.
But if veins move, help me out then. Things like retinal scans that you see in things like Star Trek and stuff like that. They talk about, you know, being able to do a retinal scan and stuff like that. But those are just veins that they're looking at.
I couldn't tell you. I would be talking through my hat, which of course I am known to do. But I don't know exactly how a retinal scan works. But what I'm saying is if you've ever had a blood test... Veins not only collapse, but they also roll away because there is an ability to actually move. There is some movement. I'm not saying they will come from the back of your hand and whip around to the front. I'm saying that there is actually some movement. So whether it's like the basic configuration of your particular veins, possibly, but yeah.
There must be some sort of base structure that it's looking at, though.
I would imagine it'd be a bit like the way that fingerprints work, where it takes particular points that match, you know, and doesn't take the entire thing.
So if you have a big accident and you've got...
I would imagine then you
have to get re-scanned.
You probably have to re-scan. Yeah.
I know somebody once who was opening an oyster shell. Unfortunately, they chose to do it with a screwdriver and it went boop, straight through their head.
Ah!
Missed all veins, missed all arteries.
I got to say...
Classic, amazingly lucky, but I think that would wreck their scan.
I got to say, when I was a few years younger, wasn't that long ago, about 10 years ago, you can't see it on camera, right here's a very long scar on my hand, and that was sort of similar idea, but I was... blind drunk and I was opening a bottle of wine and I had the pocket knife out and I was cutting the foil off and I went slip and went slice straight to my hand. I was at a restaurant, grabbed the napkin, put it on my hand. Blood is, it was like something out of a movie. Blood is dripping out of my hand on the table. I went, oh, I think I cut myself.
And you'd have to be re-scanned.
I had to have 4 stitches is what I had to have. But anyway, that was pretty good. But yeah, any sort of accident, but anything like that. If you had a situation where you burnt your fingertips, your
fingerprints would change.
But
don't you feel, isn't this a bit Big Brother? Like, I worry about something having that level of an ID thing of me. Don't you? Doesn't that worry you?
Not really, because I mean, if you think about the fact that...
No, it does not worry us at all. We are very happy to be... We do not mind. We don't mind. We can have a buttock imprint. We don't care. Yes, sorry,
John. I was just saying that, with nowadays, the fact that everybody... I don't think I know anyone that isn't registered somewhere on the internet. The government has access to pretty much everything that we can possibly do. What difference would it make the fact that they can scan my hand as well as the, you know my bank account details and my date of birth and my age and my family and my girlfriends and my, you know, my sexual, you know, fetishes or whatever. Like, they know everything because they can monitor everything I look at.
Well, they were looking at that from the internet, but I mean, actually, there's a difference between that and having it's a bit Logan's Run.
Yeah, but the whole thing is, like, they still have to scan you, so it's really just like an ID card. I mean...
Yeah, I just don't want something that's my person. I'm prepared to have a little piece of plastic with a PIN number that can be lost or stolen.
But yeah, but this argument comes down to, I mean, Australia at the moment is pushing for this Medicare card.
The ID card.
That has all of your medical records on it. Now, speaking from the father of a child who has had leukemia, and when you have to go to GPs and so forth for other various things. I think this is a brilliant idea. The idea of being able to have all our medical records in one place and basically say, here, swipe this, and you'll find out exactly what's been going on.
That doesn't worry me. That's a piece of plastic. And, you know, coming from a health background, I think that's a very important thing to be able to do.
But that piece of plastic is linked to computer files. And those
Sorry? Is that like a cloud thing?
It will be like the cloud. It'll be a file. It'll be a database.
No, I don't have a problem with that at all. I think anything that improves healthcare
and logging onto a website is nothing. There's no difference.
I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with bits of it being scanned or implanted or chipped or whatever.
Well, the whole thing is it's just scanning it. It's like it's the same way that when you go to a police station or whatever, your fingerprints get done.
I wouldn't know about that, Joshua. I've never been to a police station and fingerprinted. Uh-huh. I've only seen it on cinema.
Well, even so, the point is that a lot of the time, unless you're going through the health system or through the thing, you never even actually come in contact with that.
Don't even come up on the radar.
Exactly. Mm. So, I mean, I would imagine it would end up being used the same way, just so that, like, yeah.
Anyway. I don't want to derail your conversation.
I was about to say, all I can think here is going off on veins and biometrics and so forth. The comment that Ben Straw from Ben's Tech Show .com made, where he said he imagines you do the show in rubber gloves.
That's for Ben. Am I on camera at the moment?
Yes, you are.
I wish I could. She should have warned me, and then I could have like done a Gillian Anderson and snapped my rubber gloves on. Let's go.
Ben Straw is actually in our chat room right now, and he actually said, what's with the blue line? Guys, I don't know what the blue line is. We haven't got it on our source. We were on here the last night trying to figure this line out.
I've got blue
Ustream.
Hair.
It's got something to do with the Ustream feed. It's not on my source. It's not on the capture. I don't know where it's coming from. I have no idea where
the
blue line is.
Is it the thin blue line?
That's a thin blue line right across the center screen.
Oh, it's symbolic, deeply symbolic.
It's the border. It's the border of the war. So let's move on to the war and basically say that Microsoft has fired the next volley over the bow of Google. To draw back to that battleship analogy that we were talking about last week. This has a little bit of history, just for those who aren't aware, and I'm sure we have a lot of techs who are aware of what's going on, people who listen to the podcast. But just for that small section, last year Microsoft tried to buy Yahoo. This was a big thing because Microsoft wanted basically their advertising business and their search business as well, and they offered money and over much. Basically negotiating and everything else, they offered above market share value. Yahoo fought them off tooth and nail, basically saying, we'll never sell, we'll never sell, we'll never sell. And in the end, the offer got up to, I think it was $23 a share or something like that they offered by the end. It was either $23 or $33, I can't remember, for a share. They were finally denied and declined. Actually, Ben Straw might actually know the answer to that. But if you know, throw it in the chat room, Ben. In the end, the whole deal fell apart. Microsoft went their own way and they said, no, forget it, we're not going to do this. And then the Yahoo shares plummeted. And the Yahoo shares went to, like, single digits. And this whole thing has been a disaster for them and why they thought this was an idea of fighting off Microsoft in the first place. All of that being said, it's all been very quiet now for a few months. Now, what has happened in this last week is that Yahoo and Microsoft went back into the negotiation room. And they have now come out with a deal. I actually had this printed, and now I can't find the printout. Where is it? Here it is. Microsoft and Yahoo have now partnered, basically, on search. So Yahoo search has been dying for quite some time. That's been absolutely known. But Yahoo as a property is actually quite valuable in the sense of their front page and their advertising dollars and so forth. So they've basically got a deal now where Microsoft is going to handle the search with their new Bing search engine. Yahoo will be powered by Bing. And so they're going to handle that part of it. And in reciprocation, Yahoo is going to basically share their ad business with Microsoft. So they're getting into bed together. And this is a direct assault to Google because they're attacking.
Totally.
They're talking both things that are Google's bread and butter. These are what Google, forget everything else that Google does with docs and everything. Search and advertising are Google's bread and butter. So this follows last week with Google firing, saying that they were going to have an operating system, which is Microsoft's bread and butter. So this war is heating up, and it's going to get worse before it gets better, I think. And there is going to be one left standing. I don't think they're both going to be standing at the end. Either that, or the Department of Justice is going to get involved, and things will end up getting broken up.
But isn't that about, as you say, monopolies? I mean, are they allowed to do that?
Well, no, we've been through this before.
Yeah, we've been through this before. At the moment, they're still two independent companies. They're still fighting it out. They're still competitors to each other, so it's not a monopoly. But if one is left standing and one falls, then we have a whole big issue.
But then what will happen at that stage when they try and jump in after there is only one left standing? That person will then release the army they've been building over all these years.
Who have all got buttock imprints.
iPods will turn red and some sort of mental thing will kick in and everyone will march.
That was the end of a Simpson episode where there were giant iPods. Oh, no, it was the end of... what's that other show he does? Futurama, where in the future... iPods were whipping people, giant iPods with their little
ears. Well, it reminds me of that Doctor Who episode. Do you remember, I think it was last year or the year before with the cars and how they had the emitters in them?
Atmos.
The Atmos emitters. That's right. And of course, they were actually alien devices and they were used to try and take over the world.
They were trying to create a gas to allow the Sontarans to breed. Now, but looking at Josh's earphones, there was also that other Doctor Who episode where everyone had the little earphones.
Oh, yes, the little...
And they would hear news and jokes, and they'd all stop and hear the joke, and then really they were also being controlled.
But they look more like those little Bluetooth wanker things that people put in there.
Yeah, ears. I wasn't criticising his earphones, but they were like little silver ones with those.
These are vintage headphones.
Cybermen. That was in preparation for the Cybermen. See, just showing my geek credentials.
I think there is no doubt that Katrina has geek credentials at this point. All right. What is your sister saying? Hey, babe, it's happening now. Be afraid. What is she saying?
She's talking about the fact that what was she saying before? Something about the chips and prisoners or something.
Yes. I think we're going to get to a point where we all have a barcode just printed on the back of our heads.
What was that show?
Dark Angel.
Dark Angel.
We'll have barcodes printed on the back of our... it's going to be...
They're just going to scan our hands, man. We've been talking about this. We don't... that's so like 1990.
Boy, that was so 20 minutes ago as well. We just shelved that and came right back to it. Very good. All right, so move on with...
in conclusion.
We're
done. Goodbye.
No, I was about to say in conclusion to the war, but it wasn't actually the conclusion. In continuation with the war on the internet... We have the next stage, which is telephony, which is a big thing on the internet right now, of course, because all the telephone companies are in a state of panic because people are using more and more IP. Voice over IP. Well, we all might be in deep caca, so to speak, because yesterday an article came out that basically says that eBay... who, let's face it, have really never known what to do with this property anyway. It's been languishing since they bought it. eBay bought Skype.
Yeah.
Except for one core piece of technology, which is still owned by the people who invented Skype. And they licensed that to eBay. Well, they've decided not to renew the license. Mm-hmm. And so they're basically saying, no, you know, we want all this more money, or we don't want to do this, or whatever they want to do. Now, this is following, mind you, a story from about 6 months ago saying that they might be buying it back from eBay.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels to me like a ploy, because what eBay has basically now said is, well, if we don't have that core piece of technology, this thing is worthless, and we'll just close it down.
Yeah.
That's bad.
That's very bad.
Bad! I mean, let's face it, it's the core bread and butter for almost every podcaster out there. Mm. Just as a side note to this, Ben in our chat room, have you actually managed to fix your Skype issue yet? Put that in the chat room if you get a chance. So yeah, this is the Ben has actually just said this is the downfall of Skype.
It very much could be. I'm not sure. Like, I'm with you.
I think it's one of two things. There's two directions that this is going to go in. The two directions this is going to go in is it is either going to be eBay says screw it and closes it. I don't think that's going to happen. There's too many users, and the users will go ballistic. I mean, there are millions of people.
Yes, but if you look at how much money telephone companies are losing through Skype and these other voice things.
I don't say the telephone companies. Telephone companies are probably just leaping with joy right now.
That's right. So why aren't they massing a little, what do you call that thing where they work together, a conglomerate, to bloody buy this thing out and crush it alive?
Yeah.
I just think they must be saying, oh, weeping at night, look at these buggers out there doing Skype instead of spending lots of money using our thing. Just to even give you a very human example of it, a lady I work with, she's in Sydney in Australia, and her daughter is in Melbourne. They've had a new baby. She's gone down about every 6 weeks to see the baby. But this way, the baby is seeing her. They're interacting on Skype. Mm. That is a human face of Skype. Podcasts are great, but to take that away from people, it's evil.
Yeah, I agree. So, all right, so I think we're
evil.
In
agreement.
So I think we're in agreement that this goes in one of two directions. One direction is Skype is liquidated by eBay, and they just say, screw it. They're not, according to eBay, they're not making any money from Skype anyway. So it's not going to be any skin off their nose to just eliminate it, except for a PR nightmare.
I was going
to
say.
The second direction this could go is we go back 6 months and this was just a bluff job and the original creators of Skype are going to buy it back. And this is all ploy.
And then what would it be, advertising or something that they would make money out of, Scott?
Yeah, no, I have a third and more scary envisaging of this, which is that eBay does buy it and then charge for it.
Well, eBay already owns it. Oh, they
No. They buy out the license off the guys.
And then charge for it.
And then charge for the product.
How would they do that?
They would just charge it just the same way when you pay for phone calls.
Well, they've already got a payment system on there now, but they've just got it free Skype to Skype. All they got to do is start making you pay for Skype to Skype.
But would you have a subscription or what?
Yeah. Well, just have it like a phone thing, like 22 cents a call or something like that.
And then you'd be on for however long you wanted or whatever.
Well, it depends. I mean, like, again, well, that comes down to them.
Mirren calls Skype, our phone from her Skype, and she talks for like half an hour, and it costs her like, 20 cents. So it doesn't cost much, but it costs, So if she calls a phone number, it's got a charge. You put your credit card information. Skype to Skype is free. If you call landlines, it costs money. All they got to do is just roll that charge into calling anything.
That's awful.
Yeah, it is awful.
I'm sorry, that's my technological take on it. That's awful. And this is why I'm here, for the incisive words about technological things.
Yeah, okay, so we've got Microsoft partnering with Yahoo, we've got Skype being possibly liquidated, and now we have Google back in the news again. Google has an app. Google bought something called Grand Central in the States. Now, this is kind of irrelevant to Australian listeners because we don't get Google Voice here, but they bought the Grand Central service. They've rebranded it Google Voice, and apparently it's this fantastic service. Ben Strawn knows a lot more about this than I do because he's got the service, and it all sounds really good. And they've built an app for the iPhone, which allows you to access the Google Voice services via the iPhone. It was rejected this week by Apple. Basically said, no, we don't want that app. That app's not conducive to our system. Now, Apple has some very odd ideas about what is and what shouldn't be on their app store. And there's actually, once again, Gizmodo has
an article. Some stupid thing where you shake a baby till it gets brain damage.
They pulled that off, to be fair.
Yeah, but I'm saying somebody at Apple
got approved
that's
originally.
That's okay. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, apparently, there's an article on Gizmodo, which we won't go into. It's just kind of a fun article, which is criticizing Apple a lot. Basically called Apple's chicken shit approval process has gone too far. Because the thought here is that they've rejected the Google Voice app because it conflicts with AT&T. AT&T has obviously basically said, we don't want rivals to the actual phone aspect of it. But this is bullshit because there is a Skype app on the iPhone, and that was approved, and I've used it, and it works very well. So is this because it's Google? I mean, does this come down to the fact
that people in the playground all starting to not play with Google?
Well, I think everybody's starting to pick sides now.
Yeah, I mean, like,
it's, and the thing is, this actually surprises me though, because Google is in bed with Apple, Apple is in bed with Google. A member of the Google board is actually on the Apple board. The Google search is built into their search engine, into their browsers. They're in bed with each other.
Is Google talking beta stage at the moment, or is it being pulled out of beta now, like the rest of the program?
Google Voice.
Yeah.
That I don't know, Ben.
Well, maybe that's why. Maybe they.
We'll find that out. Ben can find that out because he's actually got it. Ben from BensTechShow.com, you're in our chat room right now. Is Google Voice still in beta, or has it moved out of beta? He's got two Google Voice numbers, he says. So he's a big-time user.
IDK.
IDK.
I don't know.
Thank you very much, right, Ben. So, yeah, I think this is... Ben says he doesn't know either. So if anybody knows the answer to that, if you're in the chat room, can you find out? Or, look, while we're actually sitting here chatting, I just don't have time to go to a computer. I have three of them around me. I don't have time. Can somebody go and have a look at Google? Somebody who in the States can have a look at Google and tell me if it's... Ben says he's checking. Good. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to find out, because you're right. That could be a contributing factor. Mm. If it's still in beta,
I don't think I've seen a single app yet that's been kind of beta status that's been allowed through.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Anyway.
All right, so we're going to move ourselves. We've got one last tech story, and then we're going to move ourselves into film.
Ben says it's out of beta.
It's out of beta. Okay, well, then there's no reason why it should have been rejected. Yep. But the joke of all this is that the side note to this is that the Palm Pre just got it. This app, the Google Voice app, has been approved for the Palm Pre. It has been declined on Apple. There's some issues going on here. We're going to keep very close watch on.
We are at the front lines of this war, and we will keep you constantly updated.
We're on Internet War Watch.
Does that make you war correspondents?
Yes, we're war correspondents from our lounge chairs. The beauty of cyberspace. That's the ultimate geek sort of correspondent, isn't it? We never have to leave our couch.
That's the whole thing, though, man. That's the whole internet state of things. We sit there, but in our minds, man, and on our computers, we are all over this. We're on the front lines. Like, we're going to end up with post-traumatic stress.
No, you're like that guy out of The Watchmen that just has all the screens going.
Yep.
Ozymandias,
just all the screens going 24 hours a day.
Are you trying to say I'm the bad guy here?
No, I'm saying your hair's perfect. Because Ozymandias' hair was perfect. And I don't know if you have a strange pet.
Okay.
Did that guy from Apple die?
Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
No, he's back at work.
There was actually a photo snapped of him this week.
You
watched
our show last week.
That's actually a little. That's
I
a
can't
very
log
interesting.
On for your information.
That's actually a very interesting little tidbit of information. I think it was AppleRumors.com. Could have been Mac Rumors. The photo of the first photo of Steve Jobs. Since he's been back, he's been back at work now, 3 weeks or something like that, quietly. Just
I think he's a zombie.
No, he's like that
Look
guy.
Look at him.
No, he's like that guy, The Fifth Day. Was that the Arnold Schwarzenegger one?
The Sixth Day,
where he kept getting, one day short, where he kept getting blanks of bodies and resurrecting himself. That's what Steve Jobs does.
He's got a blank.
And it has no penis because he didn't get to it in time.
Well, anyway, the point about this photo is that he actually is... He's dreadfully thin. I mean, he looked
dead.
I think you're right. I think he was a zombie, right?
I think.
Did he eat someone's brain? Like, did you see that on another photo?
No, but would that not make a zombie's life miserable?
Yeah.
If you're a vegan.
If you're a vegan. No, I must eat brains. I can't eat brains. It's meat.
You know? So what would they come up with?
Oh, God.
I don't know. I mean,
maybe
like,
tofu. The tofu brain.
Maybe it's just dark, you know, occult stuff, and maybe they've just resurrected the body and it doesn't need anything because it's just, you know, a living corpse, so it doesn't eat at
so
all.
So you think he's made a deal with the devil?
I think he started.
He's in negotiation.
No, look, to be fair to the man, I think the man just had a liver transplant. A month and a half ago.
Yeah, from a keen colleague.
Yeah, so
give me that and you can
so
stay
I
on.
Think, I think we'll forgive him for looking a bit thin, all right? But but he is
I'm
back
just
work.
Saying, if he enters the room while we're around, just watch your heads.
Everyone put hands on heads. Hands on heads. Protect your brain.
Protect your brain, dude. Brains. Did you guys ever see the film Return of the Living Dead, the pseudo send-up
no,
of the whole dog?
No.
Directed by Rob Bottin?
No.
Dan O'Bannon. Sorry, I correct myself. Dan O'Bannon. There's a great scene in it, though, because the zombies actually talk in that, and very, very slowly. There's one point where the police pull up to the morgue, and the zombies come out and attack the police. And then it cuts back inside, and they talk for a little bit, and then suddenly we cut back outside, and a zombie leans into the police car with the policeman's hat on, and he at the radio just goes, "Send more cops." And then later an ambulance pulls up and they attack him and he leans into the car and he goes, "Send more ambulances."
That's hilarious. Well, it's like Planet Terror.
It's a very funny film. I really
is it Planet
enjoyed
Terror?
Planet Terror.
No, what was the one that was the Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino?
Oh, yeah,
Grindhouse.
That was Planet Terror.
Planet Terror. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too. All right, we're going to talk about our last tech thing. Our last tech thing, which is an article came out on news.com.au today. Earlier in the week. I've just printed it today. Came out a few days ago. Basically, the question is, how big is the internet? Now, I just thought, I mean, we all know it's
as big as Cyberdyne.
To quote Monty Python, it's so huge. No, not Monty Python, it was Bedazzled. Sorry. Yeah. Peter Cook, so huge, you're so wonderful. It is huge. But some of these statistics were actually kind of interesting because they actually broke it down to population and saying, you know, users and so on. They're now saying that there's over 1.5 billion internet users in the world. So it is fairly huge. But what I thought was really interesting was that Australia seems to have the highest percentage per capita of internet users in the world. Now, last week we were talking about Facebook, and in this article it said there were 6 million Facebook users in Australia, and I actually said on air that I doubted this number. I said that, I mean, really, do we have that many internet users in Australia? When you have a population of 20 million, you take out the very young, the sick, the elderly, you know, what have you, and you say, how many actual internet users are there out of an entire population? Well, apparently, Australia has 17 million internet users out of a population of 20 million people. So we have 80.6% of our population is online on a regular basis.
I find that very hard to believe.
Well, this is a statistic. Now, as compared to the U.S., and the U.S. has 300 million people, and it has 227 million internet users at 74.7% of its population. The one that got me was China, because China, and this is actually slightly out of date now, because this figure, and this is only last week, this figure actually says 298 million internet users. An article came out 2 days ago saying that China had finally cracked 300 million. So they have 300 million internet users, but that only accounts for 22.4% of their population. So so they have more internet users in America. They have more internet users in America than Americans have Americans. So I think that's kind of a spooky thought. Japan is 73.8% of its population at 94 million. 66% at 41 million with France. But Australia is the surpriser. Australia just kind of blew me away.
But I have to tell you, don't make assumptions about elderly people using the internet, because with my work, we have a lot of elderly people ring up because they get information about equipment and services and, you know, like crutches and wheelchairs and, you know, where to rent and hire things, bits and bobs. And the bottom line is, a lot of them, and I'm talking over the 74 mark, 74 years of age, you can email them information, they are looking at the web, they're already getting information from our site. So, I mean, really, the elderly population aren't as
I think
a troglodyte
Australia,
as you would think.
I think in Australia especially, we have a lot. We have a lot of people getting into it. Like, there's a lot of people doing courses and I have a lot of people coming in, even into my store, with a basic knowledge of what I do and what we have at our store. So, I mean, like, it's, I think that's probably equates for why we have such a large population to internet user usage. It's the same thing as New Zealand, where the technology adapts quickly because it's a smaller population. People can pick it up a lot easier. But, yeah, you look at something like America, man, there's a lot of spread out small areas that will probably get skipped over entirely.
I think Ben from benstechshow.com, boy, you're getting a lot of plugs today, Ben, has basically said, damn old people.
I love the follow-up to that.
You'll be old one day, Ben.
Damn old people, get on the internet
and
get a virus.
Get viruses. Or I would fire back in the great internet war and say, or get a Mac.
Wait. Weren't we checking out something?
No, that wasn't actually a virus. Yeah, apparently, I haven't got details on it yet. We'll actually go into it next week because we've got to move on. But apparently a hack has been discovered on the Mac that is actually allowing people access and control of Macintoshes. It's a start. I'm going to find out more about it. And
That's a bit lousy.
And, well, yeah, it's a start. We knew it was going to come eventually. We're going to move into film news and just say that, damn you, Hollywood, you know, get over it. It's the first thing I'm going to say. The Pirate Bay boys are in jail. Okay, they've been fined $4.1 million. They're in jail for a year. They're trying to sell the company. They've actually talked even maybe about making the company go legit. I can't see.
Just like it worked for Napster.
Yeah, and I can't see. The other one is Kazaa. They're thinking about making go legit as well. Yeah, the Napster experiment didn't work. But the joke is this. Can you really take a company called The Pirate Bay and make it legit?
Excuse me, if you can take a ride called Pirates of the Caribbean and make a
I think there's a big difference between a company called the Pirate Bay trying to sell music and software legitimately
because people will feel risky and avant-garde.
I say make the Pirate Bay and open a bottle shop and sell alcohol. All right, anyway, the point is the Hollywood Studios, 10 Hollywood Studios.
No, they could sell all bad Michael Bay films. That was like just the Pirate Bay.
I'd say there's a couple of Michael Bay films and probably almost all of Rennie Harlan's films they can give away for free.
I will take you up on that.
I love Long Kiss Goodnight.
Thank you.
Love Long Kiss Goodnight. I'm talking Deep Blue Sea. I'm talking The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
This one.
You like all these?
I'm ones? Staying out of this.
Didn't
one.
You like Long?
No, no, no. I just not... love how erupting that. Just like one word.
Look, Long Kiss Goodnight. I am convinced that Rennie Harlan didn't direct that film. I'm convinced
that's a masterpiece.
I'm convinced that he had a cold and was in bed, and the second unit director must have come in and said, "Let's keep shooting. Let's keep making it." Because let's face it, I caught The Adventures of Ford Fairlane on Foxtel again the other night. And this is a film that I didn't think was great the first time. It has some funny stuff in it, but not great overall. And seeing it a second time, it is awful. It is just
you
so...
You feel your life ebbing away.
It is just so unfunny. Anyway, that we're not talking about my...
Well, at least
we've
sorted out the Long Kiss Goodnight.
Long Kiss Goodnight I like. I actually watched it again when I was sick. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. We really enjoyed watching that again. All right, but we have 10... A dozen Hollywood production companies have filed a lawsuit against the file-sharing website, the Pirate Bay. So, kicking them while they're down. They're in jail.
Well, that's what they say.
They've been fined.
You kick a man while they're down, it's easier.
Apparently, they are suing them for...
Very good point.
Demanding the site's operators be fined and prevented from distributing TV series, including Lost, Desperate Housewives, and films such as Batman. Batman. Do you think they mean The Dark Knight?
Yeah.
I don't think we're really that worried about them distributing.
It's about
Tim
George
Burton's
Clooney's
Batman.
Nipples.
George
That's
Clooney.
The bit they're worried about.
There you go. George Clooney's nipples. All right. So anyway, I think this is ridiculous. I think these two guys are in jail. They're already convicted. They've got a criminal record. They're down for the count. Hollywood is not going to get any more money out of these guys.
I like what Ben's just put in the thing saying that the Pirate Bay would be a good multiplayer game website. It just sounds good.
Yes. Garr. Yes. I would go with that. I think they need to get away from the idea of files, though, because I think as soon as you start talking files and pirate in the same sentence, people immediately assume it's illegal.
Can I just add one thing when you said...
No, you can't. Sorry.
I can't. I have to, or I'll explode.
Of course you can. Go for it.
You said, you know, these guys are in jail, blah, blah, blah. We didn't say blah, blah, blah.
Most of what I say is blah, blah, blah.
But you have to look at the bigger picture. It's not about these guys. These companies are going to flay them alive as an example and a preventative to anybody who even has the vaguest notion that they wouldn't mind sharing a file of one of their movies.
It's not working.
They are going to flay them alive.
They
are going to pull
them
down to a cellular level, to their subatomic particles.
Yes, but can I just put, it's one of those stories where if you cut one down, two more will appear in its place.
Absolutely.
Bring it. You cannot bring us down.
No,
we are the
internet. There are enormous torrent sites still out there, still functioning, quite happily pushing this stuff out. The Pirate Bay was just one of thousands. And the more they flay the Pirate Bay, the more people are rallying behind them in support. And in Sweden right now, not only did they win a seat, there's actually a political party called the Pirate Party that's been around for a few years now. But because of this whole Pirate Bay thing happening, they've won a seat in the parliament. And it looks like they may actually be on the positioning to winning several more. They have actually alienated. The production companies have alienated people because of Pirate Bay.
Yeah, but okay, people power, cool. I think that's viable. But the bottom line is, if they do go hard and, you know, you can't tell me a 15-year-old is going to be, I remain so very angry with Hollywood blockbusters that I shall not go and see Transformers 2. They just won't. People will go back, and especially Sweden, which is dark for like, 6 months of the year. You've got to do something.
Hey, we have Swedish listeners. Hey, do.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Woo.
Hello. I don't know how to... Yes. Have I been to Sweden? No, I've been to Norway. But I've never been to me. Anyway, so I think... You've got to say, is a 15-year-old going... You're saying they've alienated the public. Bullshit. People will still go to the movies.
No, they... Well,
oh,
yes.
They will.
No, no, no. Can I just point out that the number is diminishing?
But
because
wait a minute. Going to the movies is not... That's not the argument here.
You're saying... You said they will alienate the public. The Hollywood big production companies will alienate the public. How does the public show their displeasure?
By going and continuing downloading it. They're still going to go to
files.
Movie sales are actually up this year. But see, you're talking to the wrong people because I actually don't believe that the torrents and the Pirate Bays and so forth are actually hurting the bottom line. I have said this. You know, people have been pirating music and films since the beginning of movies and films, whether it was copying your VHS tape from one machine to another, or ripping a DVD, or making mixtapes off of albums onto audio cassette, people have been
copying. For a friend or loved one.
For a friend or loved one, or whatever. People have been copying. Backup copies. You get your games, and then you make your backup copies and happen to accidentally hand them to your friends. You know, it's like.
I am not involved with this behavior.
People have been copying and pirating this crap for the beginning of time. The internet just made it a little bit more public. Now, of course, they sit there and they say, and a little bit more obvious. And they sit there and they say, oh, but we're losing billions. Yet, ticket sales at the movies are up this year and have been up. People who, because you got to remember, the percentage of people who actually download this stuff, and it's like. As an example, as a father of somebody, of a child who had leukemia, you suddenly are hypersensitive to it. And you look around the ward and you go, my God, everybody seems to be getting leukemia. But they're not. And really, in effect, when you look around, we're in this bubble. We see all these people. As geeks, we look around and go, oh, yeah, all my friends are pirating. But really, it's only the geeks that are doing this, you know? Mm. And when you look at the vast percentage of people out there, the vast percentage of people are not pirating. The majority of
if
people.
I was going to want a DVD, right?
Yep.
I actually enjoy buying it in its little cover with its little special
and
features.
So do I.
Yeah.
You know.
You're talking.
So therefore, just to get your point correct, you have said that the Pirate Bay Boys are being flayed alive, that is the production companies now going so hard to the point where the public will become cross with them and then will turn to other pirating crowds to download further. And yet we'll still go. So where does this go from here?
No, the argument was, excuse my cough there for a minute, the argument was you said that they're using the Pirate Bay as a deterrent stop people from doing it. And all I'm saying is it doesn't work. Mm. All I'm saying is that the people who are going to download that material are going to download that material regardless of whether Pirate Bay exists or not. They are just moving straight to the next site, and they're getting it from the next site.
Can I just point out that we have already had this happen. We have seen Supernova. This happen with Supernova and also with Napster.
With Napster, absolutely.
With Napster. Napster is a perfect example. Mm. They did this. They hit them with everything they had. They got rid of Napster, and nothing happened.
Yeah,
we all just moved on.
That's
exactly
right. And,
like
and,
you were
saying. And the point is that Supernova was probably the largest file sharing site on the net. It was bigger than Pirate Bay ever was. It was huge. Everybody I know used Supernova to pull down everything from software to porn to comics to music and movies and TV. Supernova was closed down. Now there was no public court case or anything like there was with Pirate Bay. They were issued a takedown notice. They fought it for a while, and then basically they said, that's it, we're done. We're closing the door, right? Pirate Bay has been victimized. These guys are being attacked. And part of it's their own problem, because they have openly taunted everybody, right? I mean, openly taunted everybody, saying, you can't touch us, right?
Well, if you're going to be a pirate, you have to be a bit flamboyant.
Well, that's right. These guys were. And this is why one of the reasons why they're being attacked. But the point is, when Supernova closed down, everybody continued to do whatever it is they do with all the other various sites. And in fact, there is a site right now that was kind of like the carry-on from Supernova, which I don't know if I should mention its name on air just in case anybody from the MPAA is listening. But we all know the one I'm talking about, right? Yeah. It's got Nova in the title, all right? But anyway,
I don't know any of these sites. I'm totally.
Well, you're such an innocent, Katrina.
Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone. Oh, Ben!
You just had to go out and say it, didn't you?
Ben just went out and threw it right out there on the net. All right, so I think it's out. All right, so the site is called Mini Nova, which was basically it was the replacement for Supernova, and it's still functioning today. It's still running. There's no
people still use it.
People still use it, and you've got all the closed communities, all the gated communities out there, which are all the various torrent sites. We were talking about one last night, which I'm not going to publicize. But there's a many gated ones, which are you have to be a member to be a part of the forum. They only have limited numbers of members, and you're invited to become members of them. And these are like invisible to the MPAA, you know,
so they're
because
very
they're not
stylish, quiet pirates.
They're very stylish, quiet pirates. That's right. And I'm a member of two of them. So, you know, Ben's put that one up as well. Anya, Ben. Although Demonoid. Ben's put up Demonoid. You have to actually be invited. They've got closed.
You must be invited to be a demon.
They've got closed. They've got a closed.
The initiation ceremony is a killer.
Membership at the moment. Mm.
It's
anyway,
great after party.
The point is, my point is that I think it's time to get over the I think it's time for the studios to get over the whole Pirate Bay thing. I think it's done. They're in jail. They won.
Hmm.
You know, it's over.
Yeah.
Move on. No, I think the idea that they're spending time, money, resources on pursuing these guys when they could be out making some more films is just ridiculous.
They have to go and go reach back into their remake drawer. Why bother making a movie?
Three short film stories, and then we're going to get on to the review because we're running late. We're already an hour into this thing. We haven't even hit the review yet. Three pieces of tech news, and funnily enough, two of them are actually trailer related. We're not going to play the trailers on the show because we've had some mixed experiences trying to run trailers.
We get better at it, we will then try again.
Yes, we will try again.
Now it's just awkward for everyone.
For a moment, and then when we do the
film... Why don't you act it out, Josh?
Because the camera's too close. Maybe
you
next
go.
Time.
All right, wait.
A man, a woman, a destiny. He knew that it was coming to an end. What would he do against time?
I love camera switching.
Can you do that again, but just do it in that low voice that guy does?
That guy.
One man against the world.
Yeah, you do it.
That's
do
a
it.
Really good trailer voice.
Dude, I've been working on that for years, man. I love this guy.
He's dead now. He died.
I know.
But he had a studio in his own place, and from all around the world, he would do the trailers.
No, but the black one is still alive.
The man, the golden voice.
The one you just did.
The one that goes, one man. Yeah, he died last year. It's very
well,
sad.
Look, I'll take over. Any Hollywood producers that are listening, I'm happy to do it.
You have to do the voice. Do you use that voice and do a trailer for Geek Actually?
Yes. We're on. I'm going to actually be putting a YouTube
coming
trailer.
Soon.
I'm going to be putting I'm going to be putting a YouTube trailer up soon. We'll get you to voice it over, right? All right. First thing we want to mention at Comic-Con last week, was finally shown for Tron.
Woo!
Now,
can I just point out that as the only girl in the room, I didn't do the girly woo. It was the two boys.
Now, Katrina, have you seen Tron, the 1982?
Bet your bum.
Yeah, all right. Tron Legacy, it finally has a name. It's been bouncing around for a year now. It finally has a name. It's called Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
Reportedly, the budget is between $200 and $300 million. Jeff Bridges is back. And they are doing this sequel that it looks absolutely awesome. All right, go to geekactually.com. We have the embedded trailer right there, and you can have a look at it. This is funnily enough, though, and what's really interesting is this trailer is about 9 months old. This was, oh no, more, 12 months old. This was actually shown at Comic-Con last year, and people saw it then and went berserk for it. And there's been pirate versions of it around since then on YouTube, continually getting pulled down, what have you. Anyway, Disney has finally officially released that footage a year later as the teaser trailer for Tron Legacy. And so all I can say is it looks great, yet there's been a year's more work on this since then. This film is going to be spectacular. It's just going to be amazing to watch, I think.
Can I just add for all the gamer geeks in the room that they're already doing the game, and if the game is anything like the bike cycle bit from that, oh yes!
So I do recommend going and having a look at that trailer.
No. Let's go past recommend. You must.
You must. Go you and must look at go. That trailer right now.
Keep listening to us. And they'd go and look at
okay,
us.
Okay,
listen to us, then go have a look at the trailer. Or go look at the trailer, we'll wait.
I'll do elevator music.
No, let's move on. All right, so the other trailer that we post up this week, and now this one was actually not so much that it's a great trailer, but more about the pedigree behind it. Now, I'm just going to bring up, I've got a website that I have here somewhere. Give me a second. Here it is. Now, the other trailer that got launched is a film for Ninja Assassin. And before you sit there and say, well, that sounds like trash. Oh, my camera's locked up again. Hold on, let me just unlock my camera.
There's a tablet for that.
I'm just trying to unlock my camera. There it is. Okay, so for some reason, my camera, not your cameras, my camera keeps locking. I don't know why. Anyway.
It's because you didn't put your lippy on the screen.
Anyway, the reason why I put up the Ninja Assassin trailer is it's directed by James McTeague. Now, for those who sit and go, I have no idea who the hell James McTeague is, he was the guy who directed the film V for Vendetta, which was produced by the Wachowskis and written by the Wachowski brothers. Now, there was a lot of talk about a year ago where he was saying that he was going to produce or make a film without the Wachowski so that he could prove that he could work out from under their shadow.
Which is a stupid thing to say, in my opinion.
It is, because he is still working with him. He was a second unit director on Speed Racer, and he's actually directing another film for them coming up. But anyway, so this is his move away from the Wachowskis for his big film. It's a big action martial arts extravaganza. Lots of blow shit up. Lots of the thing that does
where shit blows up.
Sorry,
your genre right.
The woman who created it. I better not get it wrong when she's actually here. But
true. It's my personal genre.
It's your personal genre. Now, the thing about this film is that, A, for geeks out there, it's actually written by J. Michael Straczynski, who was, for those who know, is a comic book writer who also created the series Babylon 5, which I know Katrina didn't like.
Only surpassed its awfulness by Deep Space Nine. Yes, I said it.
Don't ever criticize Star Trek on my show.
I love Star Trek.
There is a podcast for Star Wars, Star Trek conversation. We can leave it to them for now. Let's just get back to the movie reviews, please. Breathe. Everyone.
Clear.
Okay. Boom. Clear. All right. Anyway, the point is that there are a lot of Babylon 5 fans out there.
Good for 10-year-olds. Ooh. Nice.
Oh, mate.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on. So he's written this film, and it's directed by James McTeague, and the trailer is kind of interesting. Joel Silver is a good producer. This is the man who produced Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, et cetera, and, of course, Wachowski Brother films. So it's going to have some good blowing up stuff. It's going to have some good fighting. It's going to be also too. The only thing that really drives me away from this film is that the lead actor is pop star Rain. And
who?
No. I'm sorry. Did it? Look, anyone that's been following this movie at all would have seen the video they released probably about 3 to 4 months ago, which was him doing the martial arts. It's just in like a gym. And I'm sorry, but that man is okay with in my eyes being on screen for that.
Are you a ninja sensei? Did you know what you were seeing?
You just find the video and watch it. It is just like, it is the top martial arts that you will see from anyone like Jackie Chan in his prime.
Oh,
it is
really?
Just, okay. Yeah, it is just amazing.
Well, he looks good in the trailer. I give him that. But
he's a rapper.
No, he's a pop star.
What's his son?
Rain. It's all Asian stuff.
Yeah, he's an Asian.
I thought you meant
that's
he was
that guy
like
that came second on Time magazine this year for like most influential people.
Yeah, and Stephen Colbert often rants on about Rain because you know people are saying that he's better than Stephen Colbert, and of course Stephen Colbert is always like Rain. Anyway, and he was in Speed Racer.
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was in Speed Racer. All right, so have a look at that trailer. That's not so urgent. You must go see Tron, but you don't necessarily have to look at this one. I just thought it was interesting that James McTeague is choosing this as his vehicle, and I'm not sure why. I thought V for Vendetta was a good film. I don't know what he's doing. Anyway.
Mm. Oh, was that kind
of... I love V for Vendetta. Anyway, moving on. The biggest news that happened was actually...
Why are you trying to stay on task? I find this puzzling. I know that we've got a running order, but it distresses. There's a whole point of this. David informs me that it's all right to become tangential.
No. It's fine. It's fine to be tangential. I'm just saying that we should wait until
he
we
wants
get
to save
public
the,
enemy.
He wants to save the real confrontation for public enemies. Because
is he ready to go hard?
He's ready. He's ready to go at public enemies. Okay. So we're ready. We're ready for a fight on this one. All right. So. Well, actually, I don't know if we're ready for a fight or not.
We may all agree vehemently.
Or all agree really, really loudly. Yeah, exactly. All right, so last piece of news, and this actually happened yesterday, actually. It kind of came out of nowhere. Alien, the 1979 film Alien, directed by Ridley Scott, it had its sequel, directed by James Cameron, called Aliens. It went on to be Alien 3, directed by David Fincher, who went on to do Benjamin Button. And Alien Resurrection was directed by the guy who directed Delicatessen and City of Lost Children. Anyway, so this is a big series. They've now gone off and done the Aliens versus Predator films and so forth. But really, it comes down to the first two films. It really comes down to Alien, which is a masterpiece of sci-fi horror, and Aliens, which is pretty much a masterpiece of sci-fi action.
Action, yeah.
All right, so if you're going to make a new Alien film at this point...
Stop it.
What would you do? All right, 20th Century Fox says, we want a new Alien film. What are you going to do? Well, the Brandywine producers thought what a good idea would be to do a prequel to Alien. About
which follows the
ship that they actually find, the one where they actually picked up the alien.
Weren't
the
they
beginning.
Saying they'd be like they're going to attempt to do the movie with almost no dialogue,
no human characters?
Yeah. No human
characters and all sorts of. And there's lots of speculation about all of this.
Well, that's in the words of David McVeigh. That's just stupid.
Well, no, I actually think it's quite exciting.
I think at this stage to bring it back to its roots, to bring it back to something
you mean
which
to
is
the eggs.
Huh?
All right. Anyway, let's continue on for a moment because this is exciting news. I'm very excited. A director was assigned to this project, finally, who was a television commercial director, and apparently, and I can't remember his name, I should have looked his name up, but apparently, he's irrelevant now, so it doesn't matter, but his television commercials were famous for basically being inanimate objects and things that were not humanoid, and so he was thought to be the perfect director for this film. If you were going to make a film that had no human characters...
How do you get your apple to cry?
Et cetera. And apparently, though, in this last week, Fox wasn't quite happy with this choice of director. They just weren't quite happy. They had another director in mind that they really wanted, and yesterday that director finally signed. And so now we finally have a director for the prequel to Alien. Ridley Scott is returning back to Alien. And so Ridley Scott is going to direct the prequel to Alien. And I think this is awesome. this is probably the best piece of news that they could have given the Alien franchise in the last 10 years. Easy. I think since Cameron did Aliens, I think the Alien films have progressively been going downhill.
I think they've just like they've lost. Like, I mean, each one gets further from what Aliens.
What it was about. Absolutely, and what I mean the for those who have actually seen the original 1970. Look, I'll start with this off really easy. If you have not seen the 1979 Ridley Scott film Alien, shame on you. Go out and rent it, or forget it. Go out and buy it. Because you'll want it in your collection forever.
In space, no one can hear you scream.
And in fact, we have the poster for it as the poster of the week on Geek Actually this week. So if you go to, you'll see it on the, if you're watching the live feed, just scroll down a bit, you'll see it.
It was really scary.
It was scary. It was brilliant. Giger's alien designs were second to none. Mm. It introduced the world to Sigourney Weaver.
Weren't the original drawings of that by Cobb?
No, the Cobb did all of the future design. He did all the spaceship design.
But now I've seen drawings of him from his works, and the alien was in it. I'm pretty sure.
Because I remember Ridley Scott, in the making of it, Ridley Scott actually says that he saw Necronomicon. He saw Giger's book and basically said, that's what we want. And Giger's a very strange little man, let me tell you. He's a very odd little strange man who lives with his mother, and he's very odd, and she's odd, and his whole house is done in that bio... mechanical style, and it's just odd. He's just a very strange person, and I don't think I would want to know him on a personal one-to-one basis.
I would not like to go to his house and get a cup of sugar.
But I will say that his design work for the Alien film was phenomenal. Anyway, I'm very happy about that, and that is good news, which is probably the last piece of good news that we have, because that's going to lead us into Public Enemies.
Round one, fight.
So I'm going to start us off with Public Enemies by playing us a little bit of the trailer. This is audio only because we've had problems with the video. So just have a listen to this.
What is it exactly you do for a living?
John Dillon, Rob Banks.
That's a serious thing to say to a girl you just met.
I like baseball, movies, good clothes, fast cars, and you. What else you need to know?
Today, I am declaring United States of America's first war on crime.
Your task will be to get John Dillinger. Are you up to that task, Agent Purvis?
Absolutely, sir.
We are pursuing harder killers.
Play a game, Mr. President. It's called Spin the Dial.
That's your money, mister?
Yes.
We're here for the bank's money, not yours. Put it away.
Now the whole country thinks you're a damn hero.
Robbing banks is getting tougher.
We're having too good a time today. We ain't thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you ought to.
Put some clothes on, miss.
They're extraditing you.
Where to?
Indiana.
Why?
I have absolutely nothing I want to do in Indiana.
All right, we're going to leave that right there because that's such a great line. It's actually one of the best lines in the film. All right, so I'm going to start us off. I'm sorry, but I have to start us off. I'm going to say that, let me just say that if this was A film like The Blair Witch Project or Deep Water or any of these other really, truly experimental films where they're shot on standard video 8 cameras and then blowing up the film and the director showed really incredible potential and you sit there and say, boy, I would really like to see, I really enjoyed that and I'd really like to see what this director could do with more money.
Mm.
I would say that would be acceptable. But, however, I want to say that this film starred Johnny Depp and Christian Bale and directed by Michael Mann. And I'm going to say this once because I don't think I could actually stomach saying this a second time without throwing up.
No.
It had a budget of $100 million. All right?
Jesus Christ.
$100 million. I said it twice. There you go. And I managed to keep
my
lunch down.
How many M's in millions?
And I managed to keep my lunch down. And the film looks like an amateurish home movie made by a bunch of high school kids. It is the worst cinematography I have ever seen in a film. The video looked like shit. It was so distracting. Unbelievable. From the minute the film started, I knew that the video was going to be an issue for me because you could see it in the trailer. And I actually said right from the beginning, it looked like that. Now, I got a quote/filmcast at this point because I think they summed it up perfectly for me when they said, the film looks like you're watching the bonus features on a DVD. Okay? It doesn't look like the final film. It looks like you're watching the behind-the-scenes stuff. And that's exactly how it looks. Now, this
is
not
deleted scenes. It's like we got all the deleted scenes put into a movie.
It is. And Dante Spinetti is a decent cinematographer. And what the hell he was doing with that handheld work, I don't know. You could see every footprint, every footstep with the camera move.
Oh,
completely
yes.
Took you out of the moment in every stage of the way. As far as the actual film is concerned, if we get past the cinematography, which is hard to do. But if you get past the cinematography,
I
have to say that it is the flattest, blandest, most one-leveled, boring film. And I cannot believe that I'm actually going to say this. Johnny Depp sucked in it.
Wash your mouth.
Christian Bale sucked in it, but that's not hard.
His suckery was less than
Billy
the previous
Crudup, who in his first scene as J. Edgar Hoover, I went, this could actually be kind of interesting. Sucked in it by his second scene. He was monotonous and boring. I got to tell you, this is a film that I thought Johnny Depp was having trouble staying awake for. He looked like he was half asleep.
So
all right, that's my feeling on it. I say, save your money. Do not waste your money. This film was disaster. Who'd like to go next?
I'd like to say, do you have anything nice to say about the movie?
I have a couple of nice things to say.
Okay, cool.
Let's
do the kick, kiss, kick thing.
Yeah,
so
because
that way
I've got nothing nice to say about it. Except for the fact... No, I'll come back to that. That's right. I'll come back to that.
Let's. You can finish up with something nice.
Okay.
Go. 2 hours, 19 minutes is a long time.
Actually, I forgot to say that in my review. The longest movie I have ever seen in my life.
Made longer by its awfulness. Yes, I agree with David. That bloody camera work just gave you the screaming ab-dabs. I will start with some of the positive stuff, and then we'll get into character attack.
We're
going to
go into spoilers later as well, so try and keep out of spoilers.
Stay out of spoilers,
just in case just in case there is somebody left who might want to see it after what I just said.
Look, as someone once said, you've got to love the Depp. I love Johnny Depp. I can watch Johnny Depp. Sitting quietly reading. I don't care. But yes, I agree. There was issues around. Anyway, I'll start with the positive stuff. Beautiful, beautiful attention to detail in terms of the costuming, the set design, all of that. Fantastic. Really well done. Really well executed. Mm-hmm. Not a bad soundtrack in terms of the 30s stuff. You could actually...
In the 30s stuff. We'll give her that.
In the 30s stuff. But the actual score was lazy.
I agree. But I'm talking about the songs that they... And having said that, Diana Krall... also needs a bit of defibrillation, like clear. Poof. Come on, dial whacker. Anyway, what else did I think was good? That was it. Costuming, set design.
I had two nice points.
And then the rest of my, the gun battles just went on for friggin' ever. And they sounded like they were going with cap guns. I was waiting for someone to start going, bang, 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 bang at you.
To be fair, as someone that does shoot, that is the most realistic sounding guns I've ever heard in my life. Because that's what a gun will sound like when it goes off.
Like a cap gun.
That sound, when you hear it from a distance, that's what it sounds like.
Guns don't sound like Dirty Harry guns. In fact, Dirty Harry's gun was a cannon. that was then recorded and played over the top. Guns actually sound a lot more poppy than that.
Especially from a distance. You get that brrr, and you get that sort of like almost popping-ness, like someone's popping bags from a long distance.
In fact, and I'll go so far as to say on the sound mix was another issue for me. I thought the sound mix was terrible. The only thing in the sounds that I actually liked were the gunshots. I thought the gunshots were really crisp and clean and realistic sounding, and I thought that was really nice. Why wasn't the rest of the soundtrack like that?
The rest of the soundtrack, yes, I agree, it was awful. And the gun battles went on for too friggin' long. I thought, yes, I get it, you're shooting at each other. Can we move on? I thought there was great potential for Billy Crudup's J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, you got a sense of his fainness.
100%.
The fainness was there, and you thought, yes, I could see you running into that cupboard and putting on ladies' clothes.
I need to channel Mirren for a second. Oh, my camera's locked up again. What's going on? I need to channel Mirren for 1 second, though, and basically say, and be superficial, and say, what was up with his neck?
I was going to say about his neck. His neck, he had a normal-sized neck when he was nude and blue, in The Watchmen.
But he also had a normal-sized neck when he was his human self in The Watchmen, when you saw the flashbacks.
Yeah, I know that. But you're right, this neck was enormous. But when you saw him in the suit, I don't know if he'd, like, bulked up, like he'd done a lot of... Because he's that sort of an actor, he would do
extra... I wasn't sure if he was wearing makeup or not. He literally had no neck.
He had no neck.
It went from his jaw to his shoulders.
Yes, I know. I noticed the neck. The neck was bizarre. So obvious. But I thought maybe that was something that was real. I haven't seen a photograph of J. Edgar Hoover, so maybe it was something in regards to that. But as I say, you've got a sense of his fainness, very much so. The other thing that I thought that was very interesting was you really had the preliminaries of the celebrity culture that the musical Chicago touched on, very much in the sense of, yes, because in the movie, I don't think this is not a spoiler, somebody wants John Dillinger, the Johnny Depp character, to go into kidnapping, and he says, I don't like that, the public doesn't like it, the public doesn't think it's okay. Mm. And they said, what do you care? And because the public are the ones that housed and harboured him as he was on the run. So it was very much saying about if you're okay in terms of if you're an interesting type of criminal, and that's that type of celebrity, considering when he was going along in the car and waving at the people standing.
Well, there's no doubt that in real life, Dillinger was a rock star. I mean, you know, he was...
Well, he chose his crime, you know, as well to stay within the public eye.
Yeah.
And
there's a line in the film where he actually says, the public wouldn't like that. And the guy says, what do you care what the public thinks?
That's what I said about the kidnapping thing. So. All right, well, the rest of everything else is... there were some funny lines. As you said, I have absolutely nothing I want to do in Indiana. Mm-hmm. That was a very funny line. There were people laughing out loud at lines in the movie theatre, but I went Thursday night to the 6:10 show, and there must have been in a fairly big cinema, can't speak, about a third, lucky to be a third of the cinema full.
We were about less than half because they hadn't even opened the downstairs, so the cinema was pretty much empty.
All right, everything else is negative and spoilers, so I'll hand over to Josh.
Okay, well, again, a lot of my stuff is spoilers as well. Following up exactly what you were saying, I honestly, there are very few movies. I was telling you there's one, but I can't remember its name, but two main movies now in my life that I have completely zoned out to the point where I am looking at something else or completely off somewhere else, and that was Lady in the Water, which is one of the most awful films I've ever seen in my life.
We're going to do a whole special on M. Night, by the way.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was an odd film.
No, I've never checked the time in a movie to find out what time it is and how much longer I've got to go, and I did that.
I did that last night.
Isn't that what you guys call twitchy bum or something? Isn't that the phrase you and Mirren have got?
Yeah, Mirren calls it the bum test. Yeah, if you start to feel your bum.
You sort of go, oh.
We felt our bums last night.
I think I moved about 1,000 times in that movie. I was just rolling from seat to seat and over. And so anyway, not important.
He actually nudged me at one point and go, you still awake?
Yeah. And the other thing that I thought was fantastic was that we usually aren't talkers in films, but we just couldn't stop yakking
because there's
just nothing on the screen. But to come back to the actual film itself, one thing that you haven't touched on yet was the actual editing. The cut and paste cinematography was just horrible, to the point where the sound itself would actually either like ebb when it was coming out the end of a piece and changing scenes, or it would just like there'd be chops in the cinema, and the dialogue would almost seem to be almost going over the top of it, like they were still in the last scene,
absolutely,
moving to the next. Yeah. And I don't, it's like, they may have been doing that on purpose. Obviously, they were, because we've seen the cinematographer do a lot better.
Deadly Spinata has been around for years.
It's almost like they were attempting to try and make it seem bad, but that was not a smart or good aspect at all.
Yeah.
It destroyed it. And when we get to the the spoilers, there's one particular scene that you already know which one I'm talking about that I am just going to rain on between Johnny Depp and the lead actress.
Absolutely. We're gonna. So I think we should move into spoilers.
Let's just go straight into spoilers.
I think we need to move into spoilers because there's a lot to be said.
There's 9/10 of my reviews in spoilers.
Yeah, and there's a couple of scenes that I've got one clip from Public Enemies which we're going to play here. Some of this you actually heard in that trailer before, but we'll play the clip. This is Johnny Depp when he first meets the girl of his dreams.
The first meets, or is this when he comes back together?
Sorry, when he comes back, when he finds her in the hat check room. That's right. Okay, so here we go.
Hit the road, sport. Keep the tip. You ain't getting other people's hats and coats no more neither.
Why'd you do that?
Because you're with me now.
I don't know anything about you.
I was raised on a farm in Mooresville, Indiana. My mama died when I was 3. My daddy beat the hell out of me because he didn't know no better way to raise me. I like baseball, movies, good clothes, fast cars, whiskey, and you. What else you need to know?
And the problem that I have with this scene is that I'm sure at the time that they were writing that scene, they went, wow, those are some really cool lines. He's so cool for school and blah, blah, blah. The problem is that I think both you and I, Josh, I don't know, from a female perspective, maybe it's different, but for you and I, we just thought it was a really stupid line. It feels contrived. It feels forced.
Yeah, but it does feel from the era. That's one thing I will say.
Very much like the women, you know, in terms of movies of the time, were depicted as wanting a guy that was in control and in charge, right? So if you're looking from a socio perspective at that time, that makes sense that she would have liked a bloke who knew what he wanted. But if you flip it and think about people who take lines like that, I mean, that is a direct rip-off from Bull Durham.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, I like this and I like that and I like that and I believe in this and blah, blah. And people go, wow, that's so encapsulated. I so totally know him now. Sure, let's go.
I want to read you a forum post, actually, that was... Josh already knows because I found it last night. Where is it? Keep talking amongst yourselves while I find it. Sorry, I'm just back on IMDb right now. So many people are talking about it. It's already moved right down the list. But this was if you go to IMDb, at the bottom of each movie post, there's an open forum where people can comment about what they thought about it.
Look at about the first 10 posts on every site, because after that, someone will say something like, "You're an idiot," and then from there on, it just becomes an attack on each other.
And generally, the forums are worthless in the sense of these people aren't really experts or anything like that. It's all
unlike us.
No,
I'm just making sure that people understand our amazing critics. You know,
we're armchair critics, and all that's fine. But what I'm saying about this is just people who have seen a film and said, "This is what I thought."
Yeah, right?
And they're just throwing it up there, and then people sit there and argue with each other. It's really what it comes down to. And usually, most of the time, it comes down to this film sucked.
Really important, insightful
stuff. Anyway, this one caught my eye, though. I often look at the boards just because they make me laugh. Some of them are quite funny. This one made me laugh. The post heading on IMDb is quite simply titled... Oh, my camera has locked again. It's simply titled, "My Girlfriend and I Broke Up After Seeing This." All right?
Oh, it gets better.
Here's the story. He says in the body... "She took me to see this movie to show me how wonderful Johnny Depp is. Apparently, she was in love with the way he treated the women in this movie. Anyway, I quickly realized that I hated this movie, so I got up about halfway into it to go to the bathroom. When I got back, she said, we could leave if I wanted to, so I said yes. Then, she broke up with me in the parking lot." that says, now, this movie is doomed to forever be the worst film I have ever seen. I just think that is absolutely wonderful. So that made me giggle. And anything that can
it
make...
needs a Surgeon General's warning. Warning this.
It does. This film does need a Surgeon General's warning. All right, we're going to go into spoilers. If you have not seen Public Enemies and you don't want to know, now mind you, it is based on a historical event, so we're not really giving
based
a... based. We loosely. Say based. It's based. It is based on a real person and based on a historical event. So really, we're not giving too much away with plot-wise, but we are going to talk about certain scenes and things that Michael Mann may have done. Now, this will take us to the end of the show, so if you don't want to hear about the spoilers of Public Enemies, I would say you might want to stop listening now. However, and then come back to us after you've seen it. However, if you really want to hear us have a really fun time with this movie, stick with us, and here we go. I'm going to say right off the bat that the scene in the woods, at the cabin, when they're having that shootout in the woods, first of all, is historically inaccurate, because apparently Babyface wasn't killed there. He was killed in his bed after Dillinger died, so much later. So that entire scene is historically inaccurate anyway, except for the fact that there was a big shootout in the woods, and apparently if you go to the woods where that happened, you can still find shell casings from... That's how many bullets were fired during that gunfight. Anyway.
I would have said that the owners of the property go around scattering empty shell casings to make people feel special.
Yes, well, that's a possibility as well. But the point that I wanted to make was, for anybody who is a fan of British television of the 70s and early 80s, I would have to say that this scene in itself probably encapsulates for me everything that is wrong with the cinematography of this film. And I would actually say, go so far as to say that the high def, air quotes, high def camera work that he uses looked no better in that scene than an episode of Blake 7.
Wow.
Wow.
I thought it looked terrible.
Ouch.
I thought
he's it put was, it out there.
Yeah. It was
just shit. And it just looked like cheap shit television video that had been thrown on a big screen. Now, I got to say right now, off the bat, when I go to the cinema, I'm going for the cinema experience.
Yes.
They charge too much.
$19 for this stupid VMAX.
I'm talking about that whole the experience of the big cinema sound and the beautiful image quality and, you know, the chalk top ice cream and the whole bit. And now that they're charging $17 at Bondi, I would have to say that if they're not going to give me the big cinema experience, then I'm not going to the cinema. This film was not the big screen cinema experience. This was a made-for-television video piece of shit. And I got to look at it and go, I'm sorry, I want my money back.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I just wanted to bring up some things. In terms of the character stuff, I mean, I know Johnny Depp's interesting. I mean, there's a sense of remoteness about the man anyway. And if you look at his character choices in his other films, he's often remote. He's often unattainable for whatever reason. You pick any number of his films. There's never a sense of an intimacy with him, even with people that he may or may not be bonking in a film. So there was a sense that there was him just saying lines to this girl. She was working her guts out to be falling in love with him in terms of the French actress doing it. But there was still a sense of remoteness about him. The only time I actually believed that he cared about her was when she got taken by the police and he's driving away weeping.
Yeah.
That, to me, was the only time he was locked in into that moment.
Even a little bit back from the scene, getting out of the car, I thought, was a big thing.
Like yeah, that, no, I agree. I'll give you that.
That was probably the only emotional scene in the entire
movie. And when
he
cocked the, what do you call the thing on the gun?
No, exactly.
And he was walking, there was determination, he'd go, oh, shit, it's going down now, you know.
Yeah. Also, I got to say that I wasn't a big fan of her, and that probably... Yeah. That and the scene where she's being beaten are probably the two scenes where I thought there was actually some substance to her.
Yeah.
Other than that, I was...
Didn't she the one that won all those awards for PF?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought she was okay. The Christian Bale, I think he did a little bit of work towards restoring himself after that
I think at least
stupid
it
Terminator
shows,
movie.
Yeah, it shows at least... You know what it was? It was the fact that we didn't get the deep voice.
We didn't do the gravel voice.
Whisper.
That's right.
The whisper.
Yeah, we didn't do the gravel voice, glad that he didn't do the gravel voice. But from a purely technical point of view as well, I got to actually point out, because I noticed it on Christian Bale as well. They always say the camera puts on 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody else find that because of the video nature of this flat video format, everybody looked really chunky in this film? Johnny Depp looked chunky, but there's one shot of Christian Bale where at the beginning when he's done the sniper shot and he's walking down that
hill. His bum was enormous.
He looked like he was carrying a ton of weight on him. It's like,
I mean, I have a big bum, and I know what they look like. But yes, he did look quite big.
I don't think he was. I think that is the format of that video. I think this is that whole flat image that it comes out
with.
But
you know what got me about his performance? In terms of the way the movie was structured, and I know we're in spoiler land, but when you sat through to the end and it said that that character signed on for another 12 months in that particular FBI bureau and then in 1960 suicided.
And then topped himself. Yeah.
I would have liked, and I know you can't say that the man in 1933 was the same man in 1960 that would top themselves for whatever occurred in their life, but I just would have liked some depth in that character, that behind the eyes, particularly since part of him technically was dying based on those interrogation techniques. Because if you look at 1933, you're in the lead up to World War II, you are looking at effectively what would become, you know, very, very bad techniques that they would later adopt happily in Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. You know, so really you're looking at this man who effectively was doing what he thought was right, being eaten out from the inside outward, and you wanted to see some sort of erosion of that, not just a little tiny tear in the corner of the eye in that big close up when he was at the window. And I just thought I wasn't getting that from that character of his.
I didn't get much from Purvis at all, actually. I didn't. Christian Bale. It's no secret. Christian Bale has left me cold for some time. I haven't been a really big fan of his. I mean, I was. I quite liked Christian Bale early on. I quite liked
Machinist.
American Psycho.
I hated The Machinist.
Whether you hate or like the movie, it's his performance we're looking at, though.
Exactly. No. The movie itself is actually not that good. But the fact that just the way that he actually did what he did, and then also what sort of like that brought him, and the way that it brought him as an actor. I mean, that may have just been in all the scenes that he looks very tired and doesn't and acts so
and
dull.
I actually quite
that
liked
might
him.
Actually just be because he was incredibly sick.
Yeah, and I also quite liked him as Bruce Wayne in the Batman films. I think his Batman was all gravel voiced and doing what he's doing, but I thought his Bruce Wayne
His Bruce Wayne was a little bit American Psycho, don't you think?
It was a little bit. Yes, it was. It was a little bit Bates-like.
Yeah. It was like, and we just slicked our hair back, and as a child, we're just not happening to kill people.
As a child actor, he was the kid in Steven Spielberg's Empire of the Sun, which I think is a fabulous film in itself.
It was that kind of that Dragons one with silly Matthew McConaughey.
I've got to say, Reign of Fire. I really enjoyed Reign of Fire.
I think it's
the last time that Matthew McConaughey's actually really acted as well. Because Matthew McConaughey's another one who's sleepwalking his way through a career.
Oh, he just needs slapping.
Yeah,
but that's anyway,
the point is that I actually don't get a lot from Christian Bale. I thought he was better than he was in his last two films, but you know, I'm not getting much. The biggest disappointment for me in this film was Johnny Depp, and I am a huge Depp fan. I love Johnny Depp. Don't get me wrong. And I would have said before this film I could have watched him do anything, but that's not true. He found me a limitation, and it's because yes, there were some nice, charming moments from him, but overall in the film, he looked like he was sleepwalking. He looked like he was not.
Do you think it was the scene structure? I mean, let's take a step back. Do you think it's the way that the movie was structured, in sense of, you know, that opening breakout scene where the guy got one of his buddies killed, so then he bashed him and flung him out of the vehicle. So you know, in a quick way, yes, that's his loyalty, but it's also his don't cross me. Do you feel it's the way the movie was structured so that you weren't able to get a through line of the depth of his character?
Because
or do you think it's his acting in a scene-to-scene basis?
No, I don't think it was him as an actor. I honestly think that the movie was responsible for the fact that the acting in it wasn't very good. Like, no. I mean, a scene that I wanted to bring up was
I know what you're bringing up.
Scene on the beach, which was horrible. And
was
the reason
horrible.
It was horrible was three main reasons. Number one, what the hell was up with her eyes? Through one of the scenes during that thing, she was blinking like one probably about every nanosecond. She's just sitting there going like this and just blinking.
I think she probably had sea breeze blowing.
Yeah, sand. That's fine, but you know, you could have put a sheet up or something. Remember, again, this is a movie. We don't want something that looks incredibly real.
I totally agree with you. What about the angle of his face? You never got to see him. It was all her being, I'm dewy-eyed and I'm in so love. Mm. And it was like someone was determined to film his back of his left ear.
But the choice, once again, this comes down to that whole Dante Spinetti camera work.
The angles were
atrocious.
Because I kept feeling like, I don't know if I'm on camera at the moment, I kept wanting to do this. Okay, could you just turn around? Could you just turn around?
And they continually shot They I felt like to me that they were using the wrong lens choices constantly because people kept getting way too close to the camera and then distorting out into these fisheye kind. And you sit there going, "You're taking me out of the moment again, guys. You're really,
you were really aware that you were watching."
I started going, "How many pimples have you got?" I was looking at Johnny Depp. Are you aging well? No, you're not bad.
Funny, Josh said exactly the same thing. Josh came out and says, "I was fascinated by Johnny Depp's pores."
And yeah, me too. And fisheye
raiders.
And I was saying, I could not take my eyes off of her mole in the middle of her forehead.
What were we calling it? It was like a fixation point because the camera kept
because
moving.
Because the camera kept moving. You're finding yourself focused on that mole.
Because you guys are hanging on by dear life. But his hand, you know in that scene where he's stroking her cheek when they first have sex?
Yeah.
And I was looking at his hand.
The entire sex scene was just so awful and awkward looking.
It was like, are we done yet? I'm going to go and look in the window. Now I'm going to look in your suitcase. And now I'm coming back.
And it's like they realized the sex scene was so boring, so they added them talking in the middle of it. So it's like we're seeing the end of the sex scene in the middle because it's like, this is such a boring thing. Let's throw in some of the talking in the middle here.
But then he was taking her from the top and then he was behind and then everyone's still fully dressed. And I thought, has he got a no nudity clause? What's going on?
Yeah, no, awful.
And then
go for it.
I was just saying, to finish up on that scene, the thing that I think pulled me the most out of that scene, the romance scene between him and her on the beach, was that one shot where he's leaning in and I can't remember, he's stroking her face or he's got his hand up or something like that, and the camera just walks like 2 steps. Like, this whole camera shot shudders and then moves in like the worst anime.
But they did that early in the film as well, the first bank job. There's a scene where, I can't remember who it is, it's not actually Depp, it's one of the others, steps out, out of the bank, onto the street, and the camera's looking at him. And then what we get is he takes a step forward, so the camera takes a step forward to him, and it's like you can actually see the camera operator's footsteps. You can actually feel the camera rocking with the steps. So it's like, he steps forward, camera steps forward, he steps forward, camera steps forward. It's like you're sitting there going, I think your head hit my shoulder. and we're only 10 minutes into the film, it's like, this is going to be a very long night.
But you know what got me? You know how he did the, I'm fondly opening my watch, and I'm looking at her face. Right?
Yeah.
And he gets shot in the shoulder later and he's laying on that bed in the cabin before the big gun battle happens. What just kills me is that he'd already had the scene and then he looks at the camera, looks at the watch, and there's a one time on it, and he looks at it again and it's got the earlier time from the other watch. So that's, that's a good bit. We'll just slap it in again. I know you can't look because you can't stand to watch the movie again, but I believe sincerely that they've used the same scene and the time.
DVD, I'm going to get it again just to look at that moment. I'll fast forward.
There's two or three times he looks at it and it's like the watch is 7 o'clock and then the watch is 9 o'clock and then it's supposed to be later and the watch is 7 o'clock. It just goes, man.
Now, that all being said, it wasn't a complete write-off. I'm going to give it one stroke, and I'm going to say that the only actor in it who I actually found myself fascinated by, I found the character interesting, and I didn't think they did enough with him, was his friend Red. I thought the actor was Jason Clarke, and it was like his sidekick throughout most of the film. And it was
like the guy that played Babyface as well, the one that was...
He wasn't bad. I found him a little bit... I actually liked him in the early scenes, like when the cops come into the room and he's eating and the girlfriend comes out with the shoes. Yeah. And I thought he was all right. I thought by the time we got to the wood shootout...
But he was trying to be Cagney again. He was. Ha, 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 I will kill you. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, he felt like... God. The problem was he felt like a caricature, not a character.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
I thought that Jason Clarke was really understated in...
The friend who said, I feel I'm going to buy it.
The one that patched him up.
Yeah. And then he
was
dies,
always like... there with him. Mm. And he had this nice screen presence. I don't know the actor. I've never seen him before.
He looks like a blown-out version of that guy from the Harry Potter movies, like the bad friend's Crab and Goyle. He looks like one of those.
Yeah, boys. He does a little, and he's kind of this big. And that's the other observation I made about the film. I actually leaned over to Josh about 30 minutes into this, about day 5 of this movie, and I actually said that Michael Mann is brilliant at casting faces because the characters looked fantastic. All the hoods and bad guys and mafioso and all that, they all looked great. They all had these really character riddled faces. Yeah. I just wish it could have been used in a better film, you know?
I think just in general, every character in that movie just had no, like, I had no feeling. Even Johnny Depp in that final scene of the movie didn't even care that he got shot.
Turned around and sweaty fat man. The sweaty
and he didn't
FBI.
Even get to pull the trigger.
I thought he got one shot off into him.
He may have, but the guy who actually shot him in the face was the guy who shows up in the last scene.
Well, I want to make a comment about him. I thought he did lovely work. I really liked... I felt you could have got a lot more of the... the doggedness and the sinister aspect of bringing in those Dallas Rangers, the Texas Rangers, because they were the guys that knew what they were doing. And I think there was a whole, you know, this could have been so much about modern crime fighting, understanding the criminal mind. I mean, those scenes could have been fascinating, you know, where they were tapping the lines and understanding behaviours. And I thought that had so much potential.
We were much more interested in looking at Dillinger, not... Mm.
Yeah, I know. And the other thing I was going to say was the guy that gave the girl the news that had shot him, so yeah. When he goes and sees Billy in jail, did you recognise him, who he was?
No.
He was...
I was so turned off by that point of the story.
Well, yeah, I was searching for something to think about.
That scene was
even
so pointless.
That scene as well. That scene was so pointless and unnecessary, it irked me.
I think the film should have ended on the fade-out of the flares in the street and him dead in the street.
And then cut straight to the words on the screen explaining what happened.
That's right.
You did not need that scene.
The guy that played that part, he was the blonde crazy out of The Hard Way with Michael J. Fox.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the chess killer.
You're kidding.
I'm not.
It didn't even look like him.
Well, I'll bet you $5. No, 5 cents is our.
You're talking about the guy who goes in to see Billy at the end.
Yeah, he's played the crazy guy from the
Michael
J. Fox.
No. Keep talking. You guys talk. Look it up.
All right. The other thing I wanted to say is, do we actually think the scene where Dillinger goes into the FBI room?
I think it was real because Dillinger was insane, and I thought it was actually that was one of the few moments where he actually
there
asked
was a
them
bit
the,
of suspense.
He
I thought,
asked
what's
them for the
happen?
Score at the end. I thought it was just terrific.
And then looking over his little glasses and stuff. Yeah.
I just showed you that it had been so long, they'd been after him so long, they'd become blasé. Because remember, they were basically not in control anymore because the FBI was taking care of it.
But also, when he drove past the stormtrooper, you know, when he made the escape from that fart-sized prison, the one the woman ran,
yes.
And then the trooper turned around and recognised him, and then they went on and then they hit it, gunned it to get away.
Yeah. Now, I was about to say, that is actually, I think Josh will agree with me on this, that was actually my favourite scene in the entire film. That escape.
And then singing.
Well, I wasn't even worried about so much about the singing. It's just the escape, the whole person, the fact that they had all those soldiers out the front.
But they
were
looking out.
Nobody was looking out. And he quietly just drives through. That, to me, if the whole film was, A, shot on film and by a better cinematographer, and was like that scene... Yeah.
I was so suckered in, I thought, oh, my God. And when the guy turned around, you think, he recognises him. What's he going to do? And then he turns back. But that very much fitted in with the John Dillinger attitude about, you know, keep people on your side.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
I thought that scene stood out above, head and shoulders above the entire film. And there was, every now and again, Josh made this observation, every now and again there was pieces of cinematography that worked. There's that one shot near the beginning of the film where they're walking into the bank and there's going up the stairs
The
roof and it follows them up the stairs and so on. That was beautiful.
But didn't that feel a little bit to you like The Untouchables?
Absolutely.
No, but the other scene that I just wanted to quickly touch on was how it was almost like man was trying to reinstill that dialogue level that he had in Heat with that conversation between Christian Bale and
the jail.
Thank you. And it was like there was this level where you could see them trying to push that kind of a dialogue, but it was almost the same line.
But it wasn't.
Really.
It was also not the dialogue. I mean, and this is what man seems to have. You've got a scene in Heat with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro being on screen for the first time in history together, you know? Mm. And they have this firecracker little scene of these two big name stars who get this one moment to, and then for the rest of the film, they never see each other. It's just one moment. And he's tried to recreate that, and he's chosen Johnny Depp and Christian Bale.
Mm.
These aren't the legends of cinema. These aren't the...
I reckon Johnny Depp could have done something if he was against somebody.
You know, you put Johnny Depp opposite, you know, Al Pacino, or you put him opposite Robert De Niro, or you put him opposite somebody of a higher caliber.
Yeah, but what would Mirren say? Mirren would say it's a backup to the...
No.
She would say it's you've got to be director-proof. She would say you have to grapple with that scene.
Sure, but you're not going to make the scene iconic because what made that scene iconic in Heat was because... two people made it their own. They made it this scene.
I
understand
what you're saying.
What I'm saying is Depp in that scene is saying lines and doing what Depp does, although I think he sleptwalked through this entire film. But Christian Bale is nowhere near Depp's standard.
Oh, no, I agree.
Christian Bale, so that scene will never be an iconic scene because we don't give a fuck who Johnny Depp is talking to at this point, you know?
But we also don't super care about him either.
No, we don't care about either of them. So the scene, but they tried to make the scene important. Wasn't the scene
iconic in Heat because we cared about both of the people coming up to that point?
No, we cared about the legendary status of these two stars, and it was promoted heavily as being the first time.
So therefore it actually wasn't about driven by the...
No, it wasn't driven by the dialogue. About the stars. And there was the lines were pretty much the same as what was in Public Enemies. It was like almost a recreation of that scene. It was about seeing these two presences on screen together and playing off each other, and that's not going to work in Public Enemies. You know, we don't have that presence, we don't have that caliber of superstardom sitting opposite each other toying off toe to toe, you know what I mean? And so what we've got is this scene that falls completely flat and feels completely useless and just adds another 10 minutes to a film that is already 17 days long.
Now, for those of you listening, we've gone from 5 days in the cinema and up to day 17. Look, I'm interested.
By the time I reached year two of this movie, I knew it was too long. Right?
I didn't even sit through the credits. The minutes lower up, I was gone.
I wanted to. I was beelining for the door.
He was on his feet, and I said, "No, wait."
She's right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I would never have picked it.
Mate, I'm legendary in that status.
You are legendary.
And we are teaching my twin 10-and-a-half-year-old nephews. They're very good. Who's that? What was he in? Mm-hmm. We're doing it.
Look, the only reason I stayed for a little bit of the credits, I didn't stay the whole credits. I said to John, he stood up as soon as the credits started rolling, and I said, "No, I want to see who shot this mess."
I want to know who's responsible for this.
That's what I was going to say. Who's responsible?
I wanted to know who the cinematographer was. I wanted to know who was responsible for this mess. And he goes, "But that's what IMDb for." So I said, "No, I want to see it on the big screen."
I want to make sure he hasn't his name taken.
Burn it into your mind.
I want it burned here. Dante Spinotti.
Well, what else is he doing?
I'm going to look him up for you. Now, he's been around for quite some time, actually.
I could look it up real quick.
I've actually got IMDb sitting here in front of me.
Oh, right, well, aren't you all
right now? Just give me 1 second, and when I start reading off some of these names, you're probably going to go, just off the top of my head, there, I'm a little bit drawing a blank. But give me 1 second. And
well, while you're doing that, I'm going to just throw something out there.
Please.
What did you think of the scene where he's held up? And of course David Wenham, the Australian actor, was in it.
What a waste of time that was, though. He was in about 3 minutes of the film and disappeared.
I know. Somehow he fell off. But you know when they're in the farmhouse with the woman, and the woman's, they've got the washing flapping in a, you know, Grapes of Wrath kind of way, and she comes out, and the kid's about to jump onto her apron strings, and she says to him, "Take me with you." Do you think that was just about solidifying his rock star status, or do you think it was about the desperation of the people at the times and the need for excitement and romance?
I was leaning towards the more second option. There was kind of the desperation. I mean, I don't know what they were trying to pull out of that scene. I remember looking at it and going, "Oh, what was that about? Like, why was that in there?"
Yes.
I mean, out of all the scenes that should have been deleted out of the movie, that was definitely one of my main ones. I mean, maybe it was trying to, you know, show his, like, because there seemed to be that the first few scenes, like, especially when he lets go of the guy out of the car and stuff, there seemed to be almost this strange line that they were trying to show the sorrow and emotion in the character. And I was like, I guess maybe it's trying to do that as well. That was what I was thinking. Maybe they're trying to show that he's, you know, that there's this anguish in his face when he said those lines to her. Because there was. Like, I mean, they were really trying to, but it didn't seem right to me.
I struggled with that scene. I thought, what are we trying to say here?
All right, so I've got Dante Spinotti on screen. Now, he's had a real mixture. He's also done a lot of television. But I think Josh will recognize some of these titles. How about L.A. Confidential?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Which is funny, because that's kind of similar era.
Absolutely. Very different director. He also shot The Insider for Michael Mann, which was much better. It was also handheld. Much better shot, though. Shot on film. He also shot Heat for Michael Mann, which was brilliantly shot. He shot Quick and the Dead for Sam Raimi. He directed, he shot Nell, Blink, he shot Bandits, Red Dragon, he shot After the Sunset. He's worked with Brett Ratner a lot. He shot X-Men Last Stand. And then recently he's directed Deception, which was an awful film. And he's shooting at the moment the latest Chronicles of Narnia. Let's hope he's not shooting that in digital handheld. Anyways.
Maybe you need to use a handheld when you're in a wardrobe.
Part of me actually thinks, man, with this movie, that what happened was I just see him being, you know, him brought in and drafted, and they've organized the contracts and all that, and, you know, it's just showing up to man, and man's just like, okay, this is what you're going to be using. You're going to do it all, you know, we're going to do it all so it's not film. We're going to do video and it'll be fantastic. And he's just sitting there going, really? Really, that's what we're doing?
That's really what you want.
yeah, there's this whole feeling that just... I honestly think that he just tried to do the best with what he had to work with.
I think the blame of this film...
Squarely goes on man,
because we know that his last two films are also digital video productions. Now, I have to look at it, you have to put it in context and say... I'm saying the digital video thing. Collateral with Tom Cruise...
looked horrible.
Yeah, but you can almost understand it was why he did it. He wanted all night stuff in L.A. He said the video was a way of being able to capture that night stuff really easily. It's got that kind of taxi cab confession feel to it. You know, it's almost as an experiment.
Yeah, you know, but like, look at the film as well. You're not talking big open scenes. You're not talking large amounts of people. It was small. It was kind of, it was intimate. It was just like two characters, usually at a time. There was a couple of scenes where there might have been a lot of people in them, but you weren't really focusing on them. And it worked well because, especially in that scene where he was in the dance floor, there was that whole kind of like moving quick cameras and stuff like that. And that was okay because it was kind of, the scene was a bit sort of all over the place and it was supposed to be that way and the scene was supposed to happen very quick and it was supposed to be brutal. That worked. When you move to this thing, you know the scene where they go to get Babyface upstairs and there's that awful bit where the camera just starts going everywhere and he's standing on the sidewalk and you'd usually use that sort of camera work to sort of establish that, like, there's, you know, everything's kind of going crazy and the person kind of, you know, is out of control or whatever. And there was none of that. He was supposed to be quite steady and quite, you know, trying to organize everyone. And the camera's going like this the whole time he's talking. And I'm just going, I have a headache.
My least favorite scene with that concept was when Billy's friend was coming to sit in the window for her and there was walking up and down the corridor. Yeah. And it was like, they're at the door. Can you just move the cameraman so I can open the door to get out of the door? Oh, flip.
And the camera was kind of going... at like bum, like, height, bum, like, height, and then looking.
Yes,
up
I'm up people. Your nose. I'm in your ear.
No, I just. I think. All right. I think we've established now that we really hated the camera work in this film. Yes. Anyway, so Collateral. I forgive him. The digital video for Collateral. I don't think it looked great, but I forgive him as an experiment. However, Michael Mann has fallen in love with this digital video look. I don't know why, but he has. Miami Vice came after that, and Miami Vice is unwatchable. I mean, I have tried to watch Miami Vice several times. I get through like the first 15 minutes and go, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. I can't do this. Mm. Do you know? It's over. I can't do it.
Counseling. I can't do it anymore.
And then, of course, Public Enemies.
I'm sorry, but I agree with him. I've tried three times. I have a copy of it, and I have literally, I watched the opening scene, and it's about the first time after this first scene with a girl and him or something, I don't remember what the scene is. When you get to the next scene, the second that happens, it's bad video, and it's moving, and I'm just like, oh God, no. The first time I actually got a copy of this, it wasn't on my computer, obviously, but it was a copy, and I actually thought that I had been given a really bad copy of the movie, and I was like, okay, I'll watch it when I get another copy. And I got a DVD version, and yeah, that's it. Yeah. I'm done. Yeah. That's all I had to say.
Now, you know, it's a hard one because you sit there and say, you know, you want to support people who are trying different things, but I think once you've tried it a few times and it doesn't work, then
yeah, but someone move has on. To say to these powerful people, it's not working.
And do you know who has to say that? The viewing public. They have to stop going to see them. You know?
Yeah, but even on Rotten Tomatoes, it's not receiving that great a review.
It's 68%. It's not like Roland Emmerich's 10,000 BC at, you know, 8%. This is, it's above the 50% mark, they say, and most of the reviews say,
you know what?
It's okay.
People are going to go and see it because of Johnny Depp. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny Depp and Christian Bale. Christian Bale has a following too. And these two guys are going to, and this is why Terminator Salvation
can we one day do a show on handheld and just, you know, whip into
that? Yeah, actually, no, I wouldn't mind because there's actually been some good handheld stuff.
I could go hard on the second and third Bourne idea.
Maybe we should leave and wait until this movie actually sort of gets to its sort of box office peak and see how much it actually makes. And if this is considered a flop or at all, or just like not as much money as they wanted, like the $100 million mark is what we're looking at.
It's already getting close to the $100 million mark. And now it's opening.
Which shoots me to tears.
And now it's opening worldwide. It's going to go more than that. Look, I think
if this works, we need to point out to people what makes.
I think I also want to point out one thing, and that is if you're going to watch a film about mobsters and the period and the detail, 1933, etc., I'm sorry, I don't want that slick digital video look. I want The Godfather. I want
beautiful, lush, beautiful depth
photography. And depth is actually one of the biggest issues I want to raise really quickly, and then we're going to finish this out. Yeah. Michael Mann himself actually said one of the reasons why he likes this digital video, and we've got to be very clear about this for those who don't understand what we're talking about. Superman Returns and Star Wars Episode 2 and 3 and almost everything Rodriguez is making nowadays, these are shot digitally. But they're being shot with Red cameras or the Panasonic Genesis, and these films look like film. They have gone to great lengths to making this digital look as filmic as possible, right? That's not what Michael Mann is shooting on. Michael Mann is shooting on digital video. He's not even trying to make it look like film. This is video.
Yeah, but it's not even that. That's not what wrecks it, man. It's the fact that the camera work is sloppy as well.
And on top of that,
you want to know how you could have fixed this movie? Do you know who Ron Schmidt is?
No.
Okay, Ron Schmidt is a camera guy. He did The Shield, that really kind of quick, lot of movement kind of stuff.
It was sharp though, wasn't it?
What?
It was sharp.
Yeah, exactly. He also did the Mist, which is the only reason I actually know the name. And they wanted the camera work to be very quick and very sporadic because it had to be very on the ball, and they wanted the scenes to be very like realistic reactions and stuff like that. So they just have these guys with these awesome little camera hoists, and they'll just move around and they just know where to go. If you had got someone like that behind this, even with the film, you could have at least at least one, if not two more stars.
I would actually go one step further and say that I think one of the things that could have actually salvaged this film is to have not moved the camera so much. Because where the camera wasn't moving around quickly or there wasn't too much activity, the video actually looked okay. So as soon as they got into rapid movement and stuff, you could actually see the artifacting on screen. You could see the blur of the video. It didn't work very well in fast motion because some of those shots where they're actually coming into banks and stuff like that look beautiful.
And but then we also started researching that and found out that some of it was...
Some of it was shot on Aeroflex. And I think some of the wider, bigger shots were shot on Aeroflex, which is
filmed.
And
those are the ones that worked.
And those worked. Anyway, the point that I was about to make before was you can make... This is digital video. It's not this digital cinema, as we talk about. And I don't understand what his obsession with this... cheap looking. I mean, we spent years trying not to look like that. You know? I mean, the whole point is we don't want to look like that, and we want it to. And I don't understand, if he is obsessed with digital, that's fine. Why isn't he just shooting with Reds or Genesis and making it look filmic, but still getting all the benefits of digital?
Yeah,
Rodriguez would already tell you that shooting on Red cameras and so forth, he's got low light capabilities and so forth. One of the things that Michael Mann said, what I'm coming back to on all this, was he said the reason why he wanted to shoot on digital is that he likes the fact that you get this amazing depth to your shots. Everything's in focus. You know, you can see right back to the horizon. It's all in focus. And I would actually say that that's the thing that I hate most about it. Because to me, video by its very nature is flat.
Yes.
There is incredibly no depth flat of field.
Yes.
Everything is in focus. We want depth of field. We want, when there's a close-up of somebody's face, that the background is blown out of focus. We're focusing on that person. We want that aperture depth of field of film. That's what makes it. And these Genesis cameras and Red cameras can achieve that kind of effect. With the video shit that he's doing isn't achieving that. He wants to, like in Miami Vice, he said, I shot it on video because I wanted to be able to catch the Florida marine layer. Whatever that means. he has said that so many times in interviews, and I still don't quite understand what he means by the marine layer. You know? I don't know. I didn't see it. I saw cheap-ass digital photography and couldn't care less.
I saw student film with a large budget. That's what I saw. Every one of these movies I've seen is just student film.
And you know what? As far as the period detail is concerned, yes, period detail is very good. The costuming, the cars, and everything else. But you know what? Hollywood's been doing that for years. It's kind of like a cop-out. We know they can do period well, you know? Mm. The problem is that the period detail was completely sunk because the camera work looked modern.
Yes, I agree.
So it didn't look like period
anymore. There was a real paradox, wasn't there, going on?
His argument to that, and there was actually he was interviewed. Now, his argument to that was that he said that one of the reasons why he shot this on video was because he said, you're seeing exactly like what the world would have looked like like if you stood on the street in 1933
and had grainy vision, had macular degeneration, and did that with your head.
Robin's put up here. Maybe it's because he's a wanker.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And on that note, we're going to wrap this up because we're actually running over time. I'm just going to finish off with a little bit of housekeeping and say that you can always go back and read some of these stories or get back any back episodes of this podcast by going to geekactually.com. If you want to send feedback for the show, if you have comments or criticisms or anything, you can send them to feedback@geekactually.com or use the contact form on the website. You can also, if you're feeling really generous, you can send us a donation. We actually have some equipment that we desperately need to buy. So if you want to donate to the show, there is a support us link on the website and you can actually donate through the show via there. We also have a post office box address if you want to send us gifts.
Send us a movie. We need something new to
send
review.
Send us.
Actually, but not next week.
No, look, if you ever actually come to a point where you say there's a DVD out or there's this or that and you want us to review it, by all means, send us a copy of the movie. If we think it's, you know, something that could be interesting for the show, we'll review it. What the hell?
Hell, if you send it to us, I think we'll review it anyway. Actually, if you send it to us,
we'll review it. All right? As simple as that. We're probably not going to review.
But don't do it via Pirate Bay.
Yeah, no, legitimate stuff only, please. We're not interested in piracy. We're not interested in getting ourselves into trouble if we can help it.
No.
What you're not clear about when you just said then, are you asking them to send us stuff that's actually been made by a production company or people's own films?
No, private production. We're talking about commercially available.
All right, that's what you just meant. Commercially available. About.
What I mean, though, by not private is not something that you downloaded from Pirate Bay and then sent to us. Hmm. Okay, so that would be my... Hello, why we lost cameras? What's going on here?
That's all right.
We're actually wrapping up anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
The cameras are finished talking about Public Enemy.
The cameras have decided that they don't want to play anymore, so we will move on from there. All right, so I'm going to see if I can actually make these cameras work one more time just so I can see everybody. Where are we? We're going to kick over to camera two, hopefully. Hopefully. Camera two, hello.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Katrina, this is Katrina Smith. How can anybody find you, get in touch with you or anything like that if they want to know more about you?
Only through Geek Actually.
Only through Geek Actually. Okay, well, I'm
a troglodyte at the moment. I have no ability to be contacted.
All right, so if you have any comments for Katrina, the lovely Katrina Smith, you can send them to feedback@geekactually.com. Just put Katrina in the subject line. We'll make sure she gets it. Then we have over here Josh. Josh, how can people find you if they want to know more about you?
Public bathrooms. I'm joking. No, I'm all over the website, and of course I do have a Twitter as well, but it's probably best to go with your one because I have actually forgotten what mine is.
Fair enough. You can contact Josh through feedback@geekactually.com, or you actually have a Geek Actually email address as
That's
well.
True.
So, which is josh@geekactually.com. So you can send Josh direct messages. If your messages are interesting, short, and concise, we might even read them out on the air. All right, so, and as far as me, you can find me on Twitter. That's David McVeigh on Twitter, all one word, no spaces. So twitter.com/DAVIDMCVAY. Or you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/David McVeigh. Or you can send mail to feedback@geekactually.com and I will find it there. I'm all over geekactually.com every day. So that's always where you can send me information. On that note, I think we will move on. I think we can finally all agree that this is not a film that is worth going to see in any way, shape, or form. So next week we've got two films. The plan is two films that we're reviewing.
We will have a very short tech session.
A very short tech and
what are the two
news.
Films?
We have Coraline in 3D opening. Now, the Americans will say we have old news, guys. Yes, we know. For some reason, they've held it here for so long. But we are finally getting Coraline. That is opening on Thursday. And we are also getting G.I. Joe.
You know Woo! What? Excuse me. I'm prepared. If you're happy, I'll throw myself on the sword of chick flicks and I will go and see The Ugly Truth with Katherine Heigl and Jared Butler.
Actually, do you know what? I will actually say that I'll go see that. We'll review that the following week.
Cool.
We'll throw that in. Two films is already too long. If we try and do three, we're going to kill ourselves.
Yeah, we could be concise.
Sorry, what was that?
We could be concise.
Yeah, so I think next week we're going to do two
you
films.
You crazy thing.
There is also the possibility, just for those who are long-term listeners, that Mirren may be on the show next week. We don't know. She's planning on coming up from Melbourne.
I'm very scared.
Oh, yes, Josh
is
there.
Come on, she won't tear you and you one. She's fabby.
She's fabby.
She's fantastic.
Alright, we'll save this for after the show. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and my goddamn camera has frozen again. All of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will talk to you more next week. Thank you.
Peace
Bye.
Out.
Bye.